Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, March 19th, 2017. This is episode 1,373. Enjoy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk tech, computers, computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, smart everything, virtual reality, all that stuff. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536, if you want to talk high tech. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you could still reach us. All you got to do is use your Skype, and call us. Website, techguylabs.com. Chat room is linked there if you want to get in the chat. irc.twit.tv. Good bunch of people hanging out, chatting. techguylabs.com. A victory for, victims of trolling on Twitter, I guess. The FBI have swooped in on a fella who, this is an interesting attack, tweeted a animated GIF or GIF with strobe flashing in order to trigger an epileptic seizure in somebody he didn't like. Person he didn't like, a reporter for Vanity Fair, had written apparently an article he didn't like. And the guy has been arrested. The FBI tracked him down. This is not an easy thing to do. Twitter is pretty anonymous. Tracked him down. Furthermore, we're able to look into his account and look at his messages in which he told people he was going to do this, spammed this at the victim. Let's see if he dies. I hope this sends him into a seizure. I know he has epilepsy. And, he's in jail now. He's in jail now. Cyber stalking is the charge. I think this is somewhat good news, because for a long time, I think it was, the old sticks and stones philosophy. Oh, they're saying stuff about you on Twitter or saying stuff about you on the internet. It's just words, right? Well, it isn't, I guess, just words. We've seen bullying on Facebook lead to all sorts of horrific outcomes. And now this. So I'm happy to see this. I think this is a good trend. And we at the internet, I have from day one, we've had such great hopes for how the internet would change things for the better. It would democratize. It would give everybody a voice. And indeed, it's done that. 1 billion hours of video are viewed every day on YouTube. Most of them pretty good. Some of them not so hot. But that's the point, is that everybody has access, in effect, to a television station that can be seen worldwide. With podcasts, everybody can do their own radio station. With blogs, everybody can do their own magazine. And ultimately, I think that's beneficial. What we didn't count on, though, at least I didn't, and I think a lot of us who are cheerleading for the internet over the last couple of decades, is that there is a small percentage of really just nasty people out there who will use it. It's, this is the old saying. This is why. Remember, did your mom ever say this? You spilled some pea soup on the sofa. This is why we can't have nice things. It's become a meme on the internet. This is why we can't have nice things. Most people use the internet for good, but some use all that free speech and access for bad. And I think that's just the nature of things. It's kind of a shock to the UK government, to the government of Britain. They have been buying ads on YouTube, I guess, along with other companies, and the Guardian newspaper in the UK. And they just had to pull those ads from YouTube because they don't control where those ads end up, and they've been ending up on hate videos. Yeah, there's hate videos on YouTube, too. A French advertiser, the sixth largest marketing company in the world, Havas, pulled its ads from for UK clients from Google and YouTube after failing to get assurances from Google that the ads wouldn't appear next to hate videos. Wireless carrier O2, the British Mail, the government-owned BBC, Domino's Pizza, Hyundai, Kia, all had ads that showed up next to stuff that they went, and you've had that happen. You see something on you. Oh, my goodness. But this is what we're struggling with these days. You know, there's nice, safe media like this radio station. But then there's the public media, which, you know, I still celebrate. I still think it's a great thing to give everybody a voice. But we've seen it used both for good and for ill. And I don't know how you separate the two. The man who invented the World Wide Web. We think of the web as the internet, but the internet predates the web. But the man who invented the World Wide Web 25 years ago, Tim Berners-Lee, Sir Tim Berners-Lee, he was knighted for, wrote an article on the 25th anniversary of the internet, talking about, of the web, I should say. See, it's easy to fall into that, I guess. Got to remember that, of the World Wide Web. Talking about the threats to the World Wide Web 25 years later. And I thought it was kind of interesting because, in a way, it shows that Tim Berners-Lee doesn't really understand his baby. He doesn't understand his creation. First one was good, and I agree with. We've lost control of our personal data. In order to use free services, we talk about this a lot on the show, like Facebook and Google Plus and Twitter and on and on and on. They've got to get something to pay for this. It's not free for Google to do the Google Cloud, to do Google Drive and Google Docs and Google Photos, but those are great free services. How do they pay for it? Well, I think we all know. They use them to advertise to us. Google's philosophy always has been, the more you use the internet, the more money we make, the more you see our ads. Facebook uses the information it has about us to target ads to us, to show us ads, but also even to target them. And I think we all know that, and it's kind of an accepted trade-off. The problem is it happens all the time, and not just with the companies we obviously know about, but even your internet service provider. FCC just retracted rules that would prevent internet service providers from selling information they know about you to the highest bidder. For advertising purposes, I presume, or marketing purposes. Think about what your internet service provider knows about you, what sites you see, what sites you search for. They know a lot about you. And, you know, these privacy rules I thought were a pretty good idea. They were promulgated late last year. But the new chairman of the FCC is against all government regulation of the internet. And to the point where he says, you know, even that, we're going to get rid of that. No regulations whatsoever. So I agree with Tim that that's one problem. The other ones are problems, but difficult, much more difficult to solve. I think he feels a little guilty for creating the World Wide Web. He says the second problem is it's too easy for misinformation to spread on the web. Well, yeah, it is. It's kind of the nature of the internet, as you know, in general, World Wide Web specifically, that everybody gets to say whatever they want. It's kind of a free speech place. But I guess it would be great to have some tools, and that we do, like Snopes.com and so forth, to help us distinguish the true from the fiction. But I don't think regulations are going to prevent this. What is fake news? What's real news? It's somewhat in the eye of the beholder, isn't it? His third point, political advertising online needs transparency and understanding. This is a little trickier one. He's pointing to the fact that you can buy ads on the internet that only one person sees. You can target ads so finely that you can aim an ad specifically at a small number. No one would buy an ad just for one person, but maybe a few hundred people that have a very specific point of view targeted at them, and no one else sees it. So you can really make anything up in those ads that you want to play to that audience. He sees these as problems. I think, though, in general, and I hope that you feel the same way, for all the ill the internet has brought us, it's mostly brought us great stuff. And it's a great thing. And that's one of the things we try to do on this show, is help you use it more effectively, avoid the pitfalls, avoid the trolls, and walk over those bridges in peace. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's do that right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number when you... I just feel like you might like this song, Kim Schaffer. Are you singing along?
I am singing
yeah,
along.
Yeah, Kim Schaffer's here to answer the phones, get you ready for your appearance on national radio. Have we lined up some fun?
We have groomed up six lucky contestants.
We have. We have.
And we'll go local first.
Okay.
Larry in Petaluma, who could just stop by and ask the question.
He should just pop in. I think he has in the past. Hi, Larry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks, Kim. Welcome, Larry.
Hi, Leo. How are you this morning?
I am great. What's up?
I should have stopped by and brought you the coffee.
That's all right. I got my coffee. All I need is questions to do the show. That's it.
Well, I've got a question. I have an accountant that I've had for a number of years who I've had ongoing questions about the security they used. And they sent me a tax form this year to sign electronically so they could e-file my tax form.
Yeah.
And they sent it through a company called Right Signature, which I think is a subsidiary of Citrix, or they use Citrix.
Yeah.
And the email came to me, and there was a hyperlink in it, which I was supposed to click on, which would take me to the document, which is a PDF download, which had my Social Security number on it. And I was supposed to sign with my signature and then, send it back to them. And I was a little hesitant to click on any links because I listened to you for a number of years. And I actually, about 4 years ago, received an email from them, which was a phishing hack.
Oh, yikes. Yikes.
Which I didn't respond to. So I called them, and they seem to think that this is secure, and I don't see how it can be, because anybody, as you know, have said many times, the email is like a postcard. If anybody had intercepted that email and hacked my account, they could click on it and have access to that document and my Social Security number and all my other information. Am I correct in that?
We're going to see a lot more of these. There's DocuSign, there's Right Signature. You're right, that comes from a company called Citrix. And the idea is that they don't want to send you an email with an attached PDF. So they have a link in it. And the real question is, how do they verify that it's you clicking that link? In other words, how do they say, this is the email for Larry and not somebody else?
That was my question. And there was no, PIN code or anything for me to use to do this.
That's what I'd prefer to see. What I'd really prefer is that your accountant would say, or even use the U.S. mail to mail you a PIN code, which is what most banks will do, something like this. Or your accountant will say on the phone, your PIN code is 1234. When you get this email, make sure you enter the PIN code. That would keep anybody, any at least casual attacker, from just opening up that email. They may be using, I'm looking at their site right now, rightsignature.com, and they claim bank level security. I don't that isn't really reassuring. I've seen the worst security from banks. So bank level security, I don't know what that means. Archive your signatures in a secure online vault. Fine. Files are protected with encryption. Fine. They're using SSL, which, as we know, that's the secure transport that is used by web browsers, but that's hackable. So not imperceptibly hackable. That's the good news. You would be able to check. Yeah. It's possible there.
It seems like the information on their site is probably as secure as any can be, which we, of course, isn't impermeable.
The weak link
is the link they send me in my.
Yeah. Them saying how they're doing this, it's hard to know exactly why they think it's secure. But I'll give you some ways it could be secure. For instance, they could, when you click that link, their servers could then say, well, can we verify that the person clicking the link is Larry? Well, we can't. We can't take a look at him, but we could see what internet address this is coming from. Oh, yeah, that's one either associated with Larry or from Larry's geographic area. They might have, Google lately has created a way to verify your identity. Remember, they used to have a robot, if you're a robot, tell us what these letters and numbers are. And, of course, it was harder for a human than a robot. But lately, right. Google's turned that off and still does it, but they do it behind the scenes. And I don't know if they're using this or not, but they could be, because Google knows a lot about your fingerprint on the internet, what browser you use, more than that, what browser plugins, what screen resolution. There are enough points of information that Google can create a profile that pretty much guarantees that it's you without anything on doing anything on your part, without even you knowing that they're doing it. Is it possible that Right Signature is doing that? Yes. Are they? I don't know, because unfortunately they're not very clear in this.
I actually phoned them and talked to one of their reps and asked this question. He said, "Well, their client has the option of requiring a PIN code."
That's what your client should do. That's what you should tell your CPA to start doing that.
Because even if they did that and sent it by the same email, it would still be a same issue.
No. They can't send you. They can't say, "Here's your PIN code and click this link." It'd have to be through a separate channel. Either through the U.S. mail or best talking to you on the phone, because then an attacker would need both, you know, have compromised you so fully that he'd be able to get that PIN and then get the email. The weak link here, you understand that once you click that link, the PDF is coming to you securely. Your signature is going back to them securely. The weak link is, as you correctly point out, that email, and they have to somehow authenticate you when you click that link. So that somebody can't see that email along the way, say, "Well, let's click the link and see what he's got." Did the document have social security numbers and things like that in it?
It did. Yes, it did, which made me very concerned.
Yeah. So the document itself is encrypted, but the ability to get the document may not have enough security on it. I would like to see a PIN. So I would tell your CPA, look, this you're almost there. The problem is the CPA is seeing this. And he's reading all this verbiage on the Right Signature website. He's saying, "Well, this is good. This is bank grade security." He's not taking advantage of the real security. I agree with you. I think you've nailed the problem here, which is that somebody could intercept the email, click the link, and then get the document. Sure, the document's sent to them encrypted. It's encrypted on Right Signature's servers, but it's unencrypted the minute it gets to you. You didn't have to enter a password or anything to see the document, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. No, nothing. Yeah.
So that's
okay. So you've confirmed. Yeah. And I empathize with them. They're a small firm. They've got family members.
They don't know. Hey, they're trying to do the best. It's better than the last time they did it, right?
Yeah, it is. It is. And so I've now asked them to just send everything, either call me and I'll pick it up or send it to me by mail. But, you know, I think I'll send them a link to this conversation when you post it so that they can.
Good. I think so. Yeah.
At least verify that I'm not just a crank.
See, they say on the website, each document is secure with a full audit log, biometric data capture, and 256-bit encryption. But what they need to do, the one piece they have to do, is authenticate you and say, "Yes, this is Larry getting this document." And that's the one thing that the one little extra thing they didn't do. And I'm glad to hear Right Signature will let you do it, but they've got to, you know, turn that feature on. Larry, I'm glad you asked. And again, this is me not knowing exactly how they're doing it. Maybe they do have something behind the scenes, but I'm guessing not. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Even if they had something behind the scenes, I mean, what they might, I doubt they're doing this, but they might say, "Well, is it his IP address?" But how would they know your IP address? And IP addresses can be spoofed. That would be.
You know what I did? I actually opened the document. I saw the link and I said, "Well, should I do this?" And I thought, "Well, I probably shouldn't." So I did the next safest thing I could think of. Rather than opening on my desktop PC, I opened it on my MacBook Air.
Yeah. Once you click the link, it's you and it's yours, and you send it back to them. It's encrypted. That you're sending it back to them encrypted. It's on their server encrypted. Those aren't the problems. So at that point, you can open it up. And I mean, as long as your machine's not compromised, you're right. You know, maybe use the Mac, which you sure is safe. But the real threat here is that somebody would get the email and click the link, and that they're not validating that it's Larry clicking the link.
That was my concern, and that's something they don't understand. So hopefully with this conversation, they'll get that and figure out a way to do it properly. Because, right. You know, I'm not the only one. And he said, "Well, they haven't had any problems." But, you know, if somebody...
Not having problems is not proof positive of anything.
Well, and even that, if somebody's identity was stolen, how could you trace it back to this episode? You wouldn't know, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You know, you certainly wouldn't know. It's an interesting problem we have because, you know, it used to be you'd sign it and fax it back. And faxes actually were, in a way, more secure because you'd have to intercept the phone call and decode it. But we're now in this digital age. But the good news is it is completely possible to do excellent authentication. It's possible to do this safely, highly safely, more safely than any other method. But you have to do it. You can't just say, well, you know, we're using Right Signature. It must be okay.
Yeah, it has to happen all the way down the line.
I bet it costs more to do the PIN authentication.
I'm sure it does. And even then, if they send it by email, it's still not any better if you're hacked.
Yeah, if somebody's got your email, right. So the best thing, yeah, exactly. That's why snail mail or voice would be better. Voice would be the best.
Yeah, okay, great. All right, well,
thanks, Larry. Good question.
Thanks.
Have a good
thank
one.
Thank you. Thanks for me. You too.
Hello, Johnny Jet.
Hey, Leo, how you doing?
Uh-oh, you're on your wrong mic.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, now I can. It was just off camera.
Yes.
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
How's everything
in?
Every little thing. Yeah, that's right. You were in Chicago or Detroit? I can't remember.
Neither. I was in Denver.
Denver.
Close.
No, it began with a D or a C or an E or an F.
Same place you were the week before.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. We talked about it.
Yes, but it was warmer in Denver than it was in L.A.
I know. I was
81 degrees, 82 degrees
82.
Yesterday.
Holy cow.
Yesterday. I didn't bring a jacket.
The weather is so funny there in the spring because it can go both ways. It's like the blizzard they had back east.
I'm sure there'll be another blizzard in Denver before the end of the season.
Yeah, yeah. What do you want to talk about today?
So actually, I just tweeted a link to you. I think you should download this app if you can. It's called Weather Puppy.
Weather Puppy.
I think you're going to love this one.
Aww.
You're going to love this one.
Aww.
And then I have a website, and I
that's cute.
And also for you and people in San Francisco, or you know, north of San Francisco, did you see that Sun Country is not going to be flying there?
No.
Out of Sonoma?
No. Where are they flying to is the relevant.
Well, Sun Country is a low fare carrier out of Minneapolis. But they fly 737s. I've flown them before, and
nice.
They're really good.
And where? And you, I've got to find out where their routes are. That's awesome. It's so easy for us to do whatchamacallit.
STS Airport, which I didn't
STS.
Know that.
STS, yeah. It's so
it's
easy
about 60
for us.
Miles north of San Francisco. I mean, we can talk about this on the air if you think that would be helpful. Otherwise,
well, it's probably too small a market to.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's good news for me, though.
Great news for you.
Yeah.
But they're only having one flight a week.
And
right now it's only seasonal.
One flight a week to where?
Starting August
to Minnesota?
24th.
Where are they going?
It goes to Minnesota, but you can connect to New York or Boston. But
one
first
flight
class
a week
is only $300 to Minnesota.
As it should be. Okay, hang on.
No.
I got Weather Puppy. Oh, this is cute. Yes, yes, yes. That's okay. Mine is too. Listen. He's been Johnny Jetting all over the country back from his travels. Johnny Jet time on the Tech Guy Show. This portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by the amazing Epson EcoTank printers. Loaded and ready to print, cartridge-free printing with years of ink in the box. Epson, exceed your vision. Johnny Jet. Oh, go to Epson.com/EcoTank for more. Good to see you. You're back from Denver, the travel show in Denver. Now, you posted a picture of you in front of a completely empty hall and said it was a sellout.
Yeah.
That was a joke, right? I'm sure you had a real sellout.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Thankfully. But
traveling like a movie star.
Exactly. Yeah. And had, but without movie star money. So
right.
That's the important thing.
Because right.
I used to, you know, when I started traveling, I was on a very, very tight budget, but my old girlfriend in college only flew business class, so I had to figure out how to stay up there.
Oh, she was a fancy lady.
Yeah.
How did she afford business class? Why is, you can tell me this. Why is business class like 10 times more expensive than economy?
Well, it used to be that much.
It's not 10 times better, I got to tell you.
They brought it down.
Oh, have they? Okay.
And it depends on what aircraft you're on. I mean, if you're flying San Francisco or LA to New York, it is much better. They're usually lie flat seats now.
Yeah, but I like that new, they call it Mint service from
JetBlue.
I really, I did Mint the other, and what, you're right. It wasn't like $5,000.
No, JetBlue is actually the reason why all the big carriers now have to lower their fares.
Ah.
So JetBlue came out with it for $5.99 each way if you get it on sale.
See, that's pretty awesome.
So the other airlines usually match it. So I've flown across country on American's lie flat for under $5.99 because
nice.
Of JetBlue.
Nice. Thank you, JetBlue.
But,
competition.
Yeah.
It's a good thing.
for sure. But there's all different tricks and things for like that. For example, there was a flight, you know, New York to LA, usually business class, lie flat is really expensive, usually a couple grand. But one of my friends who's a blogger told me, put in San Juan, go to San Juan, and it stops in New York.
Oh, so but they hate it when you do that. And then you get off of New York.
Well, I'm going to go to San Juan, but
yeah, that's what I
do that flight to New York.
Okay, you get off in
I'm
going to San Juan. Forget New York. I love Puerto Rico.
For sure.
Johnny joins us each week with travel tips for the technology enthusiast. And this week, an app and a website. And you made me download this app, and it's so cute.
Yes. If you like weather, which I always do, I'm always checking because I'm traveling a lot.
Yeah.
And if you like dogs or puppies, download Weather Puppy. It's free on Android and iOS.
Weather Puppy.
I love it.
It's approved by Boo, who I happen to know personally. No, I don't.
Who's Boo?
Boo, you don't know Boo? He's the world's cutest dog, Boo. Trademark.
Oh, that Boo?
That Boo. So it's so here's the weather for Petaluma, and it's got a little dog in a rocking chair.
So, but if you swipe up, it will tell you all the detailed info that you want.
Ah, nice. And
so it's
and
not just the,
this benefits just the ASPCA, right, and the other pet charities.
There should be, but there's over 800 images of puppies, so they try and match it to whatever the weather and time is.
Oh, that's neat.
But I love all the different detailed information.
Wow, this is a really
in the next
hour. And this is from the Weather Underground, which is a pretty good source. I think a very good source for weather.
I love
Weather Puppy. Oh, and I love the cute little puppy.
Well,
I can add other towns.
If you change the destination, it will be a different puppy.
Oh yeah, here's Miami.
And you can even upload your own puppy.
A little yellow lab. We got a black lab in Edmonton. Tokyo has the same yellow lab. That's fun. That's cute.
Because it's nighttime there. That's why the dog's
sleeping. Oh, the dog's sleeping.
Yeah.
Weather Puppy, and it's free.
Yes.
Yes. iOS and Android displays puppies along with the weather and the time. Apparently, there are 800 images. I actually quite like the Petaluma puppy. He's in a wicker rocker.
I don't know if it's going to be the same puppy tomorrow.
Oh.
I think they might, or tonight. If you go on tonight, it might be a different puppy.
This is really cool. And they have ads in it. That's why it's free. But that's okay.
Hey,
I like weather.
Yeah, me too. I mean, if you're traveling, it's crucial. Always check the weather before you're going.
It's even showing me the satellite that's above my head. Updated 4 minutes ago via Marin CC, Petaluma, California station. Oh, no, that's where it got. I thought it was giving me a satellite. It's just where it got the
the
weather.
Like, that is
that
really
would be
cool.
There is an app that will tell you what satellite, when the ISS flies above. It's called ISS Above. And you can run outside and see the International Space Station. That's a very purposeful, single-purpose app.
I bet. All right,
Weather
I got a
Puppy. Yes. Yes.
I'm not sure if you're going to like this one, but here it goes.
I hate it already. Go ahead.
Inflightvideo.tv.
Inflightvideo.tv. And what is
but
this?
But I love it. So this guy from Manchester, England is an aviation geek.
Yeah.
And he films, get this, the entire flight from walking onto the plane, the whole flight until getting off the plane. And so there's videos 16 hours long on there.
Oh, it's not even sped up?
Not at all. It's all real time. And so I was reading an interview by him.
Here's the key. Is it from the point of view of the passenger or the pilot?
No, the passenger. So he puts a GoPro Hero 4, I think he said, onto the window.
See, I'd like the
pilot's
view. And
just leaves it there for the whole flight.
Wow. Here, let's see.
And it'll even connect the ATC tower to it. But actually, the best video is the LA to New York to LA on American Airlines because they do a go around.
Wow.
But
this is really,
you know, if you're afraid to fly, this is a great way to get over your fear. Also, he said he has a lot of people who have, you know, sleeping problems. So they watch these videos to help them sleep.
Well, let's see if you get the audio too. Oh yeah. Very peaceful jet engine audio in the background,
but also with the pilot. So he has ATC in there, so he somehow connected it to the tower.
You know, I just United still do channel 9. I always love to listen to air traffic control.
You know, I haven't flown United in a year.
Oh,
so
last time I was on United, I don't think they did.
I think the pilot gets to decide which if they want to put it or not.
I always love
but I'm not sure if they even allow. I'd love Channel 9. I used to always listen to it.
Yeah.
But
because then you know before you crash, you know you're going to crash. So it's like it gives you a heads up.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't. But you don't crash. So it does not.
No, but I was listening to it one time on United, and they said that we need to divert. We were landing in Denver, actually.
And you were the first on the phone saying, give me a new flight.
Yeah. And I told my seatmate, I said, we're diverting. We're going now. I happen to know.
I have inside sources. So and what's
you're lying?
No, I'm not. I know. I have a way of knowing. What is you said there was a good one. What's the best one on here? There's quite a few.
There's a lot. He flies once or twice a month and films the whole thing. His favorite one is American Airlines New York to L.A. And you know, if you click the YouTube video part of it and you go into the YouTube, you can see the highlights of the flight.
All links to YouTube videos, which you can watch. Oh, so sure, you can get the highlights, huh? Where do you get the highlights?
You got to go into YouTube and you got to read the description. So it'll tell you, you know, the time the pushback is, you're flying over white plains or
that's
Michigan.
Cool. That's beautiful. Sunset.
Grand Canyon.
This is pretty funny. This is very funny that somebody does this. This is what I was talking about at the beginning of the show. The internet has given a voice to the weirdest possible things. And for the most part, I think that's great.
Right? Oh, there's speed up to 554 of that video, and you'll see him do a go-around. Which is a go-around is when the plane's about to land, but at the last minute, there's another plane on the runway, so the pilots have to do a whole other go-around.
Oh, the suspense. Look, he's pulling up. Yeah.
And that's happened to me a few times.
Wow. And yeah, that's scary when that happens.
You have no idea what's going on. Yeah, but this guy said that was his best flight of his life because of that.
Wow. Best flight of his life because of a go-around. This guy needs to get some excitement in his life. I do love that. I do love that. It's flight video.
In-flight video.
Inflightvideo.tv. This is Johnny Jet. You'll find him at johnnyjet.com where there's lots of stuff like this. All sorts of travel tips, a great newsletter you can get for free, several, and you can get pricing and all sorts of stuff. It's a really great travel resource. JohnnyJet.com. He's also on Twitter at JohnnyJet and Instagram, although the pictures have been mostly babies lately. JohnnyJet on Instagram. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's kind of fun. What a crazy website.
Yes, I just discovered it.
He flies strange flights too. I mean,
well,
Belfast to the
Europe,
Isle of
so
Man.
A lot of
it's okay. It's kind of cool.
It's brilliant. I think it's brilliant.
It is. It's exactly, you know, what's cool about the internet is this kind of nutty stuff. Oh, I guess he's got the jump seat, or maybe he's just shooting through the door.
Well, actually, and in the description of the video on YouTube, it tells you what seat he's in. So you know. So on that American Airlines, he was in a main cabin extra, 13F.
This is hysterical. Isn't this funny? Now, Alex is a pilot. He's a private pilot.
That's cool.
Not this obsessive. Oh, and there you get the weird prop because it's a prop.
Actually, last night on my flight back from Denver, I was sitting next to – I got on the plane. I was the first one to get on the plane. And all of a sudden, there was a woman sitting in the seat next to me. I'm like, how did you get on the plane? I didn't see you. I was right there. And she's like, my husband's the pilot.
Oh, fun.
And I was like, she gave me all kinds of cool stuff.
In-flight video on YouTube. He's got a whole channel. That is hysterical. 200 hours of real-time, full-length, unsped up flight
unedited
videos. Unedited.
Who has the time?
He goes, he flies once a month. Does he fly for business?
Once or twice a month.
Here's Dubai to Perth. That's got to be a crazy flight.
Well, that would be about 14 hours, maybe a little bit less. To Perth, because Sydney's 14 hours from Dubai.
Wow.
So this would be less.
Yeah. This is awesome. So this is interesting because you'd think somebody who flies like Alex would be like, oh, yeah, I see that out the window. But you're interested in this.
Yeah,
you want to see more of that.
But I only have so much time to devote to these things without getting sucked in.
Well, now you can. This is a beautiful flight, actually. This is Dubai to Perth. I don't know why I'm hearing Santa Monica. That can't be. Why? Oh, I must have another.
You have the LA one on.
I have the LA open. Yeah, he was landing. So this is back we go to Dubai. I like it with the ATC. That's awesome stuff. I always like
this. Good. Oh, I was shocked. I was like, he's not going to like this one.
Look, here we are. We're landing in Perth.
My sisters used to live there.
This guy must have the strangest job. Flying Dubai to Perth. The flight of the Gumple Bee. I like that. That's good. Oh, he's sitting next to a child. What's going on, Mommy? Mommy, why is it getting bouncy? Mommy, why is there flame coming out of the wing?
Mommy. When Jeff starts flying.
That's beautiful. Landing in Perth at sunset on the west coast of Australia. Woohoo! Wow, this is good. You're right. For people who are afraid of flying, this would be a great way to experience it a little bit.
I would have watched it. I would have watched the whole videos, all of them.
You need to get a virtual reality headset and a shaky seat, and you could simulate it. Wow.
All right, well, hope you have a great week.
A baby crying. Oh, you've already got that sound effect.
So can I call on next Sunday, by the way? Because Saturday I'm speaking again.
Yeah, I like having you on Sunday. Anytime. Always glad to do it.
All right.
Thank you, JJ. See you next week. Love to the baby and the wife.
Same.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
That's fun.
The Sun Country flight, I think they're marketing it as for Minnesotans becoming a wine country in the fall. And
it's weird. So it's only in the fall?
It's only going to be from like August to December or something. And that's it.
It's just to Minneapolis back and forth,
yeah,
huh?
I think so.
Oh, and Austin as well. Oh, no. New service to Santa Rosa and Austin. Oh, that's a different.
They're kind of marketing it as like come to wine country.
Right. I think that's great.
Yeah. Santa Rosa's great.
Oh, I love, if I could fly all the time out of Santa Rosa, I would. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. Here's an extra bonus from our chat room. Archandra says, if you like listening to air traffic control, just point your browser to www.liveatc.net. They even have an app. So you can listen to air traffic control to your heart's content. It's more fun when you're actually on the plane, I would guess. But I don't know. I don't know. And then PS Chops is sending us a video of a real-time train ride in Norway from Bergen to Oslo. I actually have taken that train ride, 7 hours long. It was the train ride that almost cost me my marriage. My wife said, if we ever are on that ride again... I will leave, but it is a beautiful ride because you're traveling through the snowy, at least we were, the snowy countryside in Norway, which was the ice planet of Hoth in one of the Star Wars movies, The Empire Strikes Back. So it's quite a beautiful, I didn't realize it was 7 hours. No wonder Lisa didn't like it. I'm just going to put this on the TV tonight and say, honey, we're going to, I don't know if you remember our trip from Bergen to Oslo, Norway, but I took video. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, the internet. It's an amazing thing. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, if you'd like to talk high tech, let's go to Lewis, Delaware, where Gene hangs his hat. Hello, Gene.
Hey, Leo, how you doing today?
I am great. How are you, sir?
Fantastic. Question for you about the Apple iPad.
Yes.
I'm a big fan. I got one over 4 years ago refurbished, which is great. New battery, new case, same warranty. And it's beginning to get a little slow, although fortunately it has iOS 10. And I'm looking at the 9.7 iPad Pro versus like the 12.9 iPad Pro. Both have four speakers, obviously screen size difference. Are you aware of any other differences? One is a little bit newer, the 9.7. Anything that might...
Well, the first thing I'd say is wait, because the new iPads are going to be announced any moment now, like in the next 3 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, okay. Apple doesn't pre-announce anything, but the rumor mill is a buzz with this. And there are a couple of things that I expect our new iPads to have. We think there'll be three new iPads. There'll be a new iPad mini that will be Pro. So the big difference between the iPads, besides size, is Pro versus kind of, I don't know what, non-Pro. The Pros allow you to use a pencil. They have the ability to do, you know, drawing, multi-pressure drawing. And so that's pretty cool. What else do the pros have? I think there's other features that I've forgotten now, because all of my iPads are pros at this point. So we think there'll be a mini pro, the 7-inch iPad. We think there'll be a iPad that'll fit into the same size as the old 9.7, but will have a bigger screen. They're going to shrink the bezels, the frame around the screen down, so that you can get 10.5-inch screen, which would be very nice. That'll also be a pro. That one may not be available right away. That one, we expect these will be announced in early April, like April 4th.
My.
Yeah. So you called at the right time.
Yes, I did.
The big difference, you know, I mean, besides pro and not pro, and I don't know if you need the pro. Do you do drawing at all?
Honestly, no.
So
really just email, surf the net.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about the Pro, because the ones you have are not, so you're not going to see a lot of new features. Don't be fooled by the four speakers. There are four speakers, but only two are used at any given time. So the reason they I know, fool me too.
Interesting.
Yeah, the reason they have four speakers is because you rotate it, right? So they want to have left-right stereo sound, but the only way they can do that is have four speaker ports and then reassign the sound as you rotate the device. So that left is always to your left and right is always to your right. So that's the reason for the four speakers. I wish all four were active, but they're not. The biggest difference in the newer iPads, of course, is processor speed. You don't sound like you notice a difference in speed. Certainly, the new iPads are much faster than the five-year-old iPads. That's not going to be a problem unless you play challenging games that you know use a lot of horsepower. Most of the things.
I don't really do that.
Surfing the net, doing email, all that stuff, that doesn't really matter. But
wow,
you will notice that Apple, because of the change in processor capability, will restrict the newer versions of iOS as time goes by. You won't be able to get the newest versions. You probably can't go to iOS 10 on your older iPads, I would guess.
Believe it or not, I saw a list. And the fourth generation iPad, just before the iPad Air,
right?
I was lucky to get that because
it's the last one.
iOS 10.
Good. Yeah. I would say generally you do want the latest iOS, not just for security, but there are lots of new features, like the new messages was a nice addition and stuff like that.
Well, I'm glad I called. I'm going to just wait. Thank you very much.
Wait 3 weeks. See what they do. All right. Wow. Yeah, I'm waiting.
Thanks.
This is always a bad time to buy. Okay, I'll tell you. I'll give you the dates. Never buy an iPad in the spring. Wait for Apple's announcement. Never buy an iPhone in the fall. Wait for Apple's announcement. They used to announce iPads in October, and I think they've shifted now to spring announcements. We'll see. You know, Apple is beholden to no one. But the general consensus among Apple experts is spring for the iPads, fall for the iPhones, and no one knows when they're going to do a new Mac. We're all waiting for new Macs. We got new Mac books, the new laptops in the October of last year, and those turned out to be quite a disappointment in my opinion. In fact, I got the 15-inch top of the line 15-inch with a touch bar. I hate the touch bar so much. It has no utility, as far as I can tell. Even if you have applications that use the touch bar, so what? You're not looking at the touch bar. If you're a touch typist, you're looking at the screen to have to look down, and every application changes it, and so now it's different. You have to look at it and figure out where it's just not useful. And worst case, I hit it by accident a lot with my pinky, you know, hitting the backspace, and I accidentally hit the touch bar and activate some feature that I don't want, which stops me in my tracks. I have to, you know, escape out of it. And then continue on. So I traded in my touch bar 15-inch for a smaller 13-inch without the touch bar. Also announced last fall, they're lower powered. They don't have as fast a processor, as fast a Thunderbolt. They don't have as many Thunderbolt ports and all that. But I'm much happier with the 13. In fact, I love the Mac. It's a MacBook Pro 13 minus the touch bar. Excellent. So will we get new MacBooks this spring? Probably not. I do think we're due for new iMacs, Mac Minis, Mac Pros. So I would look for something in that announcement as well for those. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. We'll get back to the phones. Our next call will come to us from beautiful Loma Linda, California. Cody, hang on. He's got a Chromebook, but he can't use the newest feature of the Chromebooks. And I'll explain what's going on with that and why it is a great feature when we come back. 8888 Ask Leo. The website, by the way, techguylabs.com. And that's free. There's no sign up. You're welcome to go there anytime, Monday through Friday, as well as Saturday and Sunday. You'll find audio of the shows, video of the shows, answers to the questions in text, and you can add your own thoughts and comments too. TechGuyLabs.com. We're going to take a break for news from your local stations. We'll be back with more. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. I'm going to torture Lisa with this. So it's actually beautiful. He got a view at the front. If you like trains, but this would put you to sleep. I didn't realize it was a 7-hour trip. I really enjoyed it. I did it with Catherine Hall and her boyfriend, Ryan, and Lisa and I. But all four of us went. We had such a good time. It was a little snowier than this. Well, I guess when you get out, yeah. This is the ice planet of Hoth bit. She loved Bergen, though. She said, why did we leave Bergen? Why are we taking a 7-hour train ride? We could take an hour flight. Honey, look. Remember our great train trip from Bergen to Oslo? Ooh, I saw that one. The train plowing through the snow. Wasn't that amazing? Wow, was that amazing. Wait a minute. Here's 10 hours of paint drying. YouTube, is there anything you can't do? And then it says, bored with 10 hours of paint drying? Here's a video of watching grass grow. YouTube. Here's 10 hours of an oscillating fan. On a hot day, this is so refreshing. Just run this video. People have a strange sense of humor, don't they? Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and smartphones, smartwatches. Our photographer, Chris Marquardt, back from Siberia. I know I like saying that. He's back from Siberia, where he took some amazing photos. We'll talk a little bit about digital photography in the far north in about half an hour. We're going to talk anything with a chip in it, anything about technology. I'd love to talk with you. Let's start with Cody this hour from Loma Linda, California. Hi, Cody.
Hi, this is actually Cody the Coder.
I know. Hey. Hey there. Hi there. Ho there.
Yeah. So the other day, I found out that the Chrome bit I got for Christmas is the commercial version, and I don't know if that has anything to do with why I can't get Android apps on it.
Yeah, probably. So not all Chromebooks or Chrome devices, and Chrome bit is the one you plug into the TV, right?
Yeah.
Not everybody not every bit of Chrome OS hardware can do Android. The chief feature that they are looking for is touch. And obviously, you can't do touch because you don't have a touch screen. I'm not convinced that the Chrome bit can't do Android. There's a list at Google's site on which hardware? They say it can.
Yeah, but I looked at the back of mine the other day, and it said it was the commercial version, so I don't know if that has anything
to do with it. Oh, it might. But remember that if it can, even you know, if it can, you're going to have to get the updated Chrome OS to support it, and I'm not sure they've pushed it out to all Chromebooks yet. So you might be surprised. You might be surprised that, you know, one day your Chrome bit updates, and oh, look, there's the Play Store.
Well, I have the update you need, though.
You're sure you do? Yeah.
I'm sure. I've checked like 30 times.
Darn it. Well, if you think about it, on the TV, it's a little less useful. What Android apps did you want?
I just thought it might be nice to have to be able to download some games.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a Cody, I think it was a Cody on Reddit who was having trouble with his home-built PC that he and his dad had put together. Was that you?
No.
Nope. It was another Cody, I think. He was a young guy, and his dad had said, all right, I'm gonna buy you the parts to build a PC, but before you can build it, you have to write a paper on each part, and the better the grade you get on the paper, the research paper, the better the part you can get.
Wow.
That, I thought that was pretty cool. And then Cody posted on Reddit saying, I bought all this stuff. I wrote all these great papers, but it won't start. And then they figured out, you know, he had a wire twisted around or something, and it was all better. And everybody was so proud of Cody. And I think everybody's proud of you when you call in, too. I think that's awesome. So, but the real thing about an Android, it's so cool that they put the Play Store on Chrome, but it's kind of a experiment still. I don't think, you know, I mean, it's, and really it makes sense more if you're in a touch environment, because a lot of Android apps kind of expect you to be on a phone where you could touch it.
Yeah.
Right? Not on a big screen, but there are games, you know, if there's Hearthstone and stuff that would be perfectly fine without touch.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to use a mouse. What do you do with your Chrome bit? It's on a big screen TV, or what is it on?
I just use a HDMI monitor.
Okay, that makes so it's really a computer for you. And then you have what do you have, a Bluetooth keyboard and mouse?
Well, I have a USB keyboard and mouse with a touchpad built in.
Nice. So the Chrome bit had a USB port on it.
Yeah, but just one.
Right. So you have to have the double up. That's pretty sweet. And that's an inexpensive computer that you could do a lot of stuff with, including, by the way, I think a lot of times, and certainly when I first got my Chromebook, I thought, oh, you can't do like coding. You can't write programs on a Chromebook.
Yeah.
But you kind of can, because there's servers out there that will let you do coding in a browser. So, in fact, you can't. Yes. In fact, the most interesting thing for me is, and I've interviewed these guys, there's a group of people who are trying to convince schools for kids your age, like middle schoolers and high schoolers, to teach coding instead of just plain old algebra. In other words, to supplement their algebra classes. Are you in Algebra 1 yet?
No, I'm only in fifth grade.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, this wouldn't be till you get into middle school. But the group, but you should find out about this. It's called Bootstrap, and the website is bootstrapworld.org. But one of the things that they teach with, because they know many schools won't have computers, you know, that can code, is they use a web-based coding platform. I think it's called, what's it called? It's called WeScheme, WeScheme. It's actually great because you can learn one of the most important, it's at WeScheme.org, one of the most important languages for coding, which is Lisp. A lot of people, and I bet you're doing this, you're learning Python probably, right?
Yeah.
Which is fine. And Python's a great language. But you can learn some bad habits learning in Python. So the people who really are serious about programming say, you know, the kids these days, they ought to learn Lisp or one of the Lisp variants like Racket or Scheme. And so they created this program, bootstrapworld.org. It's a curriculum.
Okay.
And you might want to check it out. And then the Wii Scheme will let you on your Chromebit write software in a Lisp, a very good Lisp variant called Scheme. So I highly recommend it. Yeah, my answer is I don't know if the professional or the commercial version of a Chromebit didn't have Android, but that would make sense because those are intended for like menu displays and things like that in stores. And they don't need Android. So maybe that's it.
Yeah.
If somebody knows, call us. Yes, Cody.
So I have my dad's old Android phone, and if I can root it, can I get a newer version of Android?
You bet you can. What phone is it? Do you know what kind of phone it is?
No. All I know is the manufacturer is LG.
Okay.
I don't know if this makes a difference, but the carrier is Virgin Mobile.
Yeah, so this is what you're going to do. There's a forum. Ask your dad's permission first. But there's a forum called the XDA Developers. It's xda-developers.com.
I rooted my Kindle with that.
Oh, you already know about this. So you need to search for the exact model of the phone. So you'll have to look in about the phone, you know, where it says about this phone, and get the exact model number. And then search it at XDA Developers. And if there is a root for it, not all phones have a root exploit, but most do, and certainly older ones tend to. I bet you anything this LG does. It will say exactly what you have to do. You probably need a Windows machine with the Android SDK software developers kit on it. If you've rooted your Kindle, it'll be very similar to that process.
Okay.
And then XDA will have a list of ROMs you can use. Once you've rooted it, you put Clockwork Mod on there or something like that, which is a alternative boot firmware, which lets you install other ROMs. And yeah, you'll be able to put Android 7 on there and all sorts of things, Cyanogen Mod and all the other things. I think that's a great project for you, Cody. You'll learn a lot about how computers work by doing that.
Yeah.
You're a smart fifth grader. I can't believe you're in fifth grade. Wow. That's pretty cool. You're obviously schooling your teachers at this point.
Yeah. I help my teachers. My teacher has said, "What am I going to do without you next year?"
Oh. Cody, tell Dad about Bootstrap World. Maybe they can get your school to start teaching that. That would be great. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. What am I going to do without you, Cody? You're going to keep calling, though, right?
Yeah.
Good. Is it your dad that's that helps you do all this, or your mom? Who is it that's helping you do all this?
No, it's just me.
Just you?
I told them about it, but
they don't understand it. Wow, you have a knack. Sometimes you're very lucky. Sometimes when you're young, most people don't figure out what they want to do until they're much older than you. But sometimes when you're young, you fall on something and you go, "You know, I really like this."
Yeah.
And I think you found something you really like, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a great opportunity for you to develop your skills now, and who knows, this could be your career. Would you like to do this for a living when you get older?
Yeah.
What do you think you might want to do? Programming or hardware, or what do you like?
Yeah, programming, probably Windows.
Good. Well, if you're going to do Windows, you probably should learn, you can download the Visual Studio for free. You have a Windows machine lying around?
Yeah, I have Visual Studio.
Yeah, it's free. And that's a great programming environment. You can really do some amazing stuff in there. I like to tell young people learning coding, though, to start. See, you're doing what I did, which was you start with basic or, you know, and you kind of learn and you bang on it. But you get bad habits that way. So I like to encourage young people to learn with things like this Bootstrap, because they teach you kind of the right way, and so you get in your head at the very beginning kind of the important things about programming that'll give you good habits going forward. But you know what? You're doing what everybody who writes software these days does, which is just kind of banging it out, and you're learning, so that's good too.
Yeah.
You'll survive. It didn't hurt Bill Gates. Hey, it's good to talk to you, Cody.
It was good to talk to you, too.
Call back anytime.
Okay.
All right. See you later. Bye-bye. Yeah, I'd like to get kids to use Dr. Racket. You know, some of the more functional programming languages. This WeScheme is really cool. You can it's web, it's browser based. It's very much like Dr. Racket, and it's browser based. And then if you create an account, you can save your code. So you can do this whole thing on a Chromebook using Scheme, which is a nice variant of Lisp, kind of a more modern. But Bootstrap World is real, you know, very exciting. The idea is schools could easily replace their Algebra 1 classes. Even math teachers who aren't coders could teach this. They give you the curriculum. They give you the training. And they have free workshops, which I've been kind of meaning to do. I think I would like to do this. Because eventually I'd love to teach this stuff. We interviewed Sri Srivanasam, I think was his name. It's one of the people who do this. These are the same people who wrote the book How to Design Programs, HTDP, which is kind of the classic. And the Dr. Racket community is involved and stuff. It's really good. They give you all the curriculum for free, all the materials. And it's a good alternative to... there's Chris Marquardt. Hi, Chris.
Hello.
Feeling better, I hope.
I am.
Got that nasty Russian flu.
Thanks. Yeah, the Siberian bear flu.
Are we doing a review, or are we just going to look at your pictures?
Yeah, we're doing an image review. We can look at a few pictures. I sent you an email with a link to the pictures.
Good. All right. Well, I hear you hear me, and we'll talk in 10.
Let's hope it'll stay that way.
Okay, thanks, Chris. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You know, I had a nice conversation off the air with Cody, our 11-year-old fifth grader, who is a computer whiz, clearly. It's probably pointless, you know, and people like of my generation and, you know, the computer programmers that come from my generation, most of us were not formally trained. You know, somebody like Bill Gates dropped out of college, wasn't a computer science major. He just was brilliant with computers, and he learned by kind of hacking at it. And most of the people that I know who got into computers in the 70s and 80s, that's what we did, which is fine, but you learn a lot of bad habits. So I want to encourage the younger generation, kids like Cody, if possible, to start their programming journey with tools that teach you good habits and give you a deeper understanding. It's almost the difference between, you know, thinking of programming as just like, well, it's a way to tell a computer what to do. I think that most of us, that's what we think of computer programs, right? You know, I'm going to write some lines of code that will tell the computer what to do. Add 2 + 2. That's kind of the way people would normally think of it. But really, these better schemes like Bootstrap are really more teaching you a language for describing problems. This is a kind of a deep difference, but it's instead of here's a list of instructions to tell the computer to add 2 + 2, what we're trying to come up with is a language to describe problems and their solution. It's a little more mathematical without being, you know, math, and it's a different way of thinking about it. But if you learn that way, then you really, I think you become a better programmer. You have a deeper understanding of what's going on. So try to get the young people going that way instead of doing what I did, which is bang out spaghetti basic code until it worked for some reason. Brittany in Anaheim, California. Hi, Brittany. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, thank you. I actually have a question for you. So regarding battery drainage. So
good.
I'm a huge Apple fan.
Okay.
I have the 7S Plus.
Nice. Isn't it beautiful? The most beautiful phone, I have to say.
Yes, it is amazing. My fiance has the Samsung Edge, so he's an Android person.
What are you going to do? You're a mixed family. I'm sorry.
Yes. So we've actually both been having some issues with the battery just draining a lot quicker.
Yeah.
I know he's had more issues than I have, and I've had an Apple since, you know, the very first, you know, iPhone ever came out. I've never experienced issues with it. Have you heard anything?
Yeah.
As
so
far as the battery.
Yeah. So you have probably one of the best phones for battery life, the 7 Plus. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons it's good is because it's big. You know, so there's more room for battery, but also because Apple's very aggressive about controlling the applications on the phone. They shut down background applications very quickly. You know, the way your battery drains, obviously, is an application running, doing something. And the worst kind of application will run in the background. Now, Android is a little less aggressive about that, although they've gotten better and better at shutting down background applications. But what you'll find if suddenly, you had a phone that had great battery life, and then for some reason this week it's been terrible, is there's probably an ill-behaved application.
Gotcha.
And it is sucking the juice out of your battery. Now, again, Apple's pretty good about shutting these down and preventing ill-behaved applications from draining the battery, but that doesn't mean it can't still do it. For instance, Facebook is a notorious culprit for this. Mm-hmm. Facebook is a big battery hog. And because people are always looking at Facebook, even if Apple shuts it down after a few minutes, you open it up again, it's still going to drain your battery. So you kind of want to look for programs that are draining your battery. Both your boyfriend's phone and your phone have battery life information in the settings. So if you go to your settings and you look at the battery area, it'll show you what's using your battery. In fact, I'm looking at mine right now, and Facebook, 37% of the battery, right? So, so I, you know, in my case, that's exactly what's using a lot. Then there's a game, then there's Google Photos, but it drops off very quickly. You can also look at it in the last 24 hours and the last 7 days, and that's very useful to get some idea. But Apple is, as always, a little cagey about telling you exactly what's going on. They may have, for instance, they don't show any of their stuff in here. They may have a system tool that they've updated recently, and they made a mistake in the programming, and it's running away with the battery life as well. So often turning the phone off, you know, rebooting it. Now, you know, that's more than just turning off the screen, but it's holding down the button until it says slide to power down. And then do that, and then turning it back on again. That will clear out anything that's lying in the background. That sometimes helps. If you think you have an app that is using an abnormal amount of battery, try uninstalling it and see if that makes it a big difference. The 7 Plus also, like all phones, will drain faster in a weak cell area. So you're used to the battery life you get when you're home and at work, you know, the places you go all the time. But when you travel, you might go somewhere where your carrier signal isn't as strong and your phone spends more time hunting for it. That's a notorious battery drain. In fact, the radios in your phone, Bluetooth, the GPS, the cell radio, and the data radio, those things are the biggest battery drains. So you want to look for unusual situations there. Maybe a tower went out in your town, and so your phone's working harder to get the signal. Did you download an unusual amount of data? Did you, for instance, put all your music on your phone? That'll cause a greater drain. Sometimes it's something gone wrong with the phone, you know, but generally it's something temporary going on.
Is there also, and I hear this, so I want to ask your opinion, when kind of a, I don't know if this is a myth or not, but if your phone's charged or you leave it charged overnight, that you can overcharge it?
Nope,
is that true?
That's a myth. Okay. So the good news is, especially with a well-made phone like your Samsung and your Apple phones, those have circuitry to prevent overcharging. In fact, the only thing that's dangerous on your phone is draining the battery fully, like completely draining it. Mm-hmm. And again, there's circuitry to kind of prevent that on both the iPhone and the Samsung phone. In general, though, if you're not, you know, if you're near a plug, plug it in. It's always best to keep your phone charging at all times. Nothing wrong with charging it.
Okay.
It's kind of a mystery. You have to just do a little detective work to figure out why the battery is draining. But you have the, you know, this iPhone 7 Plus, you have the Plus, right?
Yes, yeah. I love it. And
yeah.
The camera's amazing. Everything about it is amazing.
Great phone. And it should go all day easily. But as I said, for instance, I was just visiting my son in Boulder, and It didn't go all day. I got down to about 30 or 20% at 6 p.m., which is very unusual for me. And that's because I was in a new area and I was driving around a lot and it was hunting a lot for the signal. But in my my normal use, this thing will go easily, get me through the day with 60% left. No problem at all.
So Samsung's very similar. Look at the...
Samsung, yeah. I mean, Android isn't as good at shutting stuff down. But yeah, Samsung also has, in the settings... battery information. On Android devices, you can install third-party programs like GSAM that'll tell you even more. GSAM is great. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your boyfriend's phone is not as going to get anywhere near the battery life you get. You're going to get the best battery life on your iPhone. There are very few Android phones that come even close to the iPhone 7.
That's what I figured. We're always in a battle about it.
I just
got everything Android.
I just gave you. Well, I love Android. The real thing that bugs me is everybody wants to make thinner phones, which means less and less battery life. And I would be willing to have a thicker phone if it would just get, you know, I just want 18 hours of solid battery life, because that means I can go through the day, get home, plug it in, charge it overnight, and I'll get through the full.
Exactly.
That's all I need, 18 hours. Very few phones will do that. That's one of the reasons I continue to carry an iPhone 7 Plus all the time, because it's the one that will give me that every time. There are a few Android phones. The Sony Xperias will do that. The Moto Z Play will do that. But none of the Samsung phones. And they're beautiful phones. That edge is gorgeous. By the way, the next iPhone might look a lot like that phone. There's rumors that it's going to have that curved display.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I want to warn you, so your boyfriend, when he tries to rub that in when you get your new iPhone, he says, oh, I've had that for years.
I'm on that Apple program, which is really amazing.
Oh, so you get the new one each time.
Yes.
Good for you.
I'm the first one to get it. it's awesome.
Yeah. I got which finish did you get on your iPhone 7?
I did the rose gold.
Oh, it's beautiful. Isn't it beautiful?
It is.
I got the jet black. I took a chance because people were saying, oh, it's going to scratch. And I don't carry it in a case, and it is still beautiful. It is just gorgeous. Yeah. This is easily the most beautiful phone ever made. I mean, it's just stunning.
I love it.
God. Well, there you go. Battery is a big issue. I mean, you know, as they make these phones thinner, you've got less battery in there. But Apple, to their credit, does everything they can to give you good battery life.
Well, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Nice to talk to you. Take care, Brittany.
Nice to talk to you, too. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Let me find your email. Photos from Russia. And, of course, I didn't do my photo assignment. Oh, Chrissy's are great.
Nobody did?
Break confused everybody?
Enough people did. No.
Break was confused.
Break didn't confuse too many people.
Oh, good. All right.
Everything's good.
I want to get a... oh, these are beautiful. Is there a slideshow of your... on the Russian
stuff? No, but if you open them and move the mouse out of the window, you get a kind of a full screen image. And that,
then
you can forward with the cursor keys.
There's Rocky the Flying Squirrel. Oh, I love these onion domes. I just love them.
It was great this time around. Different weather, different
it's
light,
so clear.
Different snow. It was a lot of fun, and these are pretty much in reverse order. So you start in Moscow, and then you get to Lake Baikal.
Look at that Soviet era sculpture. Jeez.
Yes, that was a whole park with old sculptures that they scrapped and they put all in this park. It was amazing.
Huh. The new Russia.
That's Moscow. It's as crazy as other big cities.
Yeah, it's just a big city. Oh, it's great. Oh, I love it.
We met her on a market. She recognized us from last year.
No, wow.
So she was all happy.
That's so cute.
Chatty without knowing the language. That was really funny.
Was that in Moscow too, or that looks like?
Yeah, that's all Moscow. That's the metro in Moscow.
Wow. Just like a metro.
Beautiful station.
Oh, now we're getting somewhere.
Oh, we did some husky sled riding.
Wow. Oh, I love the birches.
Lots of fun stuff.
He's back, ladies and gentlemen, from Siberia. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, just back from his photo workshop that you went to Lake Baikal and Moscow.
Lake Baikal. Lake Baikal. In Siberia. Yeah. It was just beautiful.
I'm looking at some of your images. They're just gorgeous. Where can people see these images? We'll put a link in, I guess, in the show notes.
If you go to photography.chrismarquardt.com, you will find these and a lot more pictures.
Okay.
So Lake Baikal, this huge big lake with lots of water, and in winter it freezes over, reliably freezes over, as it's in Siberia. And we took several trips over the river, over the lake in cars, and we spent there during the sunsets getting great pictures with the light hitting shards of ice, and the ice is kind of in places it's broken. It is some of these shards, I mean, it sounds small, but some of these shards are kind of, I don't know, 6 feet high or higher.
You can't tell because it's just the ice.
Well, some of the pictures I included people, but some of them were just so nice.
It's so gorgeous.
Keep them in an abstract fashion.
Exactly. Just lovely. There's
a... And this year we had both. We had the black ice, which means the ice that is clear, and under it, it's so deep that you don't really see a bottom. So you see just a black surface pretty much that you're standing on. With all these cracks in them, that makes it very, just very special to walk on. And then we had some snow, and then we had patches of the ice covered in snow, and shards of ice covered in snow, and ice at islands that, you know, when before the lake freezes over, the rocks at the island are already cold enough for the ice for the water to freeze on. So the wind splashes the water against the rocks, and then it freezes and it makes icicles. So you can, on your back, you can slide under these icicles, and all of a sudden you have like 500 icicles pointing downwards at you.
Wow.
And when if you shoot that with a wide angle, and the light, of course, as it's ice is flooding through it, so you have these like otherworldly experiences there. It's really, really beautiful.
Fun. Your second time there.
That was my second time there, and I don't think it's going to be my last one. Yeah. Not in 2018. That is already planned full, but possibly 2019, possibly with an addition where we might go down to Mongolia, which is not too far from there.
I tell you, I admire you photographers, because you do anything for your art, including brave sub-zero weather and...
It wasn't that cold. It was minus 20. The coldest was minus 20 Celsius, which I don't even know. It's
cold.
It's not too cold, no. I mean, you have to prepare. We actually, the operator there had warm pants and warm boots for us, so we didn't even have to bring anything.
Nice.
It was really nice. It was well organized.
Well, enough of that. It's time to do our review. You assigned some photos to us before you left. You asked us to take pictures of the concept break. And
yes.
While I did not submit because I'm terrible, I'm a bad person, I see we got quite a few people submitting their ideas. Of course, we didn't tell you what break meant, so...
And what made it really hard is that break has probably at least 50 different meanings, so...
Yeah.
People could pretty much interpret this any way they liked.
Well, that's
good.
It was wide open, right?
Yes, they did. Yeah. So I've, again, chosen three pictures to have a closer look at. And the first one is by James Baumann, who has a picture called Winter Break. And first I thought, oh, that's just kind of a snapshot. But looking at it closer, what it shows is it shows a guy on... It's not skis. What is it called?
Snowshoes?
The other thing. No. the other thing that slides.
Snowboard.
Snowboard.
Yeah. That thing.
Of course. A guy jumping over something. He's in the air. The sun is in the shot, really bright, makes a lot of lens flare. And then I saw the shadow of it, and the shadow shows him the right way around. He's pretty much with his snowboard down in the snow in the shadow. So it's this double figure, the guy in the air being upside down, and then the shadow being the right side up, and the sun kind of bringing that all together.
It's like quite an amazing shot, actually.
Lovely photo. Lovely photo.
Yeah.
He probably shot quite a few to get this one, but it's this little moment where everything kind of comes together, and I like that.
I love the shadow on the snow. I mean, it's one thing to get a guy in the air, but then to get the shadow on the snow
The other thing you can see is that he might have wiped his lens first, because a lot of the lens flare that you see around the sun is from smudges on the lens or from dirt on the lens.
Not a bad idea.
Kind of gives it away a bit.
Yeah,
but it works. I mean, that's the kind of dirt that kind of makes it organic.
Sometimes
so I don't
grunge
mind
is good.
Yes, true. Second picture by Jean John Scenes, called Reflections After Rain, where he or she writes, there was a break in the weather and I went on an evening walk. And that's a photo where the photographer shot the reflection of trees in a puddle and then turned that shot upside down.
You're so smart. I was trying to figure out what was going on here.
Exactly, because you look at it and you go, huh, what? Something doesn't look right. And what you see now is the trees, but the trees at the top where the leaves would be, there's dirt. So it's kind of...
I thought it was stars at first.
Doesn't it look amazing?
This is an amazing photograph. Really like this. I mean, and that's a cool technique, to take a reflection and reverse it. Turn it upside down.
It's an old technique. It's been done a million times. I've done it so many times, but every time it kind of gets a bit of a surprise going for the viewer. So I like that. I like that a lot.
Well done.
And last but not least, the third shot is one that's more on the story side by GWENGER2.
I'm not helping you on this one.
Yeah, the title is February 2017-001. Very creative title there. And that, I don't know, something that did something to me. It's like a street shot
or something. I mean, there's a story going on here.
It's a story going on. What you see is a black and white photo of apparently a couple. You don't really see a lot of them. You don't see their heads, but you can tell that the one on the right is a woman. The one on the left is probably a man. And they are in a kitchen, and they both have their arms folded.
Facing away from each other.
Back to back.
Yeah.
So it's black and white.
Here, huh?
Mm. And the black and white gives it a bit of a, I don't know, maybe a bit of a desolate feel. So
it also feels photojournalistic. Like when you see black and white, you think, oh, it's a news picture or something.
It triggers that in you. That's right.
Yeah.
And the story, I mean, you could put all sorts of stories in there. Could be that they just broke up. Or that they are taking a break of
something. They're having
something.
A fight. Yeah, something's going on.
Something like that, yeah. But you're not really sure. But just the reason you kind of, I mean, they could be laughing up beyond on the top of that line that where you don't see their faces. But it's the reason that you are coming up with these stories is because the photographer doesn't show everything. The photographer leaves stuff out.
You project on the picture what you think is going on.
You pretty much, as a viewer, you fill in these blank spots.
I like that.
It's your job at this point to fill in those, to interpret what's going on. And leaving stuff out is always a good way to do that. It's a very simple photo, but I like it.
Very good stuff. All three of you, everybody who submitted, thank you.
And everyone else, too. Beautiful photos.
Everyone, yeah. And we're going to have a new assignment. You got about 20 seconds.
I have the new assignment that, again, is a word that has a lot of meaning. Turn.
T-U-R-N.
T-U-R-N.
I guess it could be T-E-R-N, but let's make it T-U-R-N. Take a picture, upload it to the Tech Guy group on Flickr. Make sure you put the word turn, T-U-R-N, in there to let us know. And in about a month, we'll take a look. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Nice stuff. Turn. Very good. Welcome back. I'm glad you're feeling better. We missed you last week, but
well, thanks. Thanks for the power of antibiotics.
Yeah, you got the Russian.
The Russian bear flu. Yeah, I have no idea. I returned and Monica had the same kind of flu, but she caught it somewhere else. So there you go.
All right. Nice.
Anyway, I'm back for good.
Welcome back. We missed you.
I'll be back next week as well.
All right, Chris. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye. Turn is our assignment. I love this song. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Banging a gong there with Michael Cozio, our musical director. Nice job, Michael. Kim Schaffer, our phone answerer. And you, So glad you're here today. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Let's go to Menifee, California. Tara is on the line. Hi, Tara.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome.
I am actually an older student looking to go back to college, and I am stupid enough to want to be an electrical engineer.
Congratulations. That's wonderful. We need you. Continue. Do not get discouraged. Go for it.
Well, thank you. And having not done a lot of this coursework since high school.
It's got to be challenging, doesn't it? Yeah.
It is very challenging. But I'm trying to find the right tools for the job.
Good.
And I'm looking for some sort of tablet or MacBook or whatever is best. But I'm starting to get into coding and
great.
All of those
great
beginning steps of getting into this. And I'm wanting to know what is the best tool for somebody like myself.
Is there a software that you the school needs you to use, or does it matter?
There's specific at this point.
Okay. Because, you know, sometimes, and this can really throw a monkey wrench into, you know, what you want to get. They may say, well, you absolutely have to have AutoCAD, and that means you need a Windows PC of a certain power and so forth. If they haven't told you, I would still go to your advisor and say, you know, looking ahead, what am I going to need? But I'll tell you, you're doing EE, not CS, electrical engineering, not computer science, right?
Correct. And unfortunately, the way that it's looking, it's almost like you're minoring in it.
Minoring
in computer science.
Yeah, if you're doing a lot of coding, that's
typical. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. EE tends to be more like chip design and hardware, and CS tends to be more programming and all of that. But you need to do both, right, in both disciplines.
Right.
My inclination is to steer you towards a Linux computer, believe it or not.
Okay.
The reason being, you can get any laptop you want that you like and put Linux on it. And that is for, you know, most coders prefer Linux. We'll use Linux because for most kinds of coding, that unless it's, you know, you're doing Windows coding in Visual Studio, they're going to be using either Linux or a Mac. They use Macs because you have a Unix command line and you can install, you know, it comes with Python and Ruby and you know, all the languages that you might end up using. I think maybe a good choice for you, depending on how much you have to spend and on how much time you want to put into it, would be a Windows PC that you can dual boot with Linux.
Okay.
Windows is not great for coding. Windows doesn't come with many coding languages. Installing them is a little more complicated. It's just not the ideal platform. A Mac would be, or a Linux machine would be. But given that you may end up, I mean, I don't know, you may be doing some CAD work for the EE part. You might be working with some, you know, tools that are Windows only. Having Windows wouldn't be a bad thing.
Okay.
So, you know, your choices vary quite widely. I presume it's going to be a laptop?
Yeah, a laptop. Or a tablet, if there's one out there.
I would get a laptop. I think for a student, it's always good to have a real keyboard.
Okay.
However, a lot of the current Windows laptops are what we call convertibles. They have detachable keyboards, so they can be both. But for a student, I don't see a lot of use in a tablet.
Okay.
So you could go and get, I think for running Linux, Dell and Lenovo are probably your best choices. Lenovo makes some really excellent high-end Windows hardware that you can also run Linux on, as does Dell. Dell has a whole division supporting Linux. You can buy a Dell with Linux on it, not Windows. The reason I like Linux is because it's more like a real Unix operating system. It's going to be open source. I think it's more computer science friendly, frankly. But honestly, it's probably not going to make that much difference in the long run. Is light more important to you, how light it is, or is power more important to you?
At this stage, because again, I'm just like starting into this, I carry a lot of textbooks and
you want light.
Take all my stuff.
You want light.
Something that comes with me to work as well, because I also work full time. So,
and you probably don't want to spend more than, I'm guessing, $500 or $600.
I'm available to spend a little bit more. It's going to kind of...
That's the cutoff point. Below that, you're going to get consumer PCs, which are cheaper hardware and more prone to breaking. Above 500 and, you know, up to maybe 1,000 or 1,200, you're going to get more solid gear. A Mac is going to start at $1,000, actually more like $1,200. They're overpriced. So I'm going to steer you away from a Mac, although a Mac is what, if you go to a, you know, any geek convention or, you know, go to any code workshop, that's what everybody's using. You'll see all those glowing apples there. And as soon as you go in classes, you're going to see those as well. But, you know, you get real street cred if you've got a Windows PC running Linux. Then they're going to go, oh, she's real. She knows what she's doing. So
yeah, I'm not quite there yet.
You will be faster than you think. I love it that you're doing this. I really want to encourage you. And you will be one of the few women in your class. And it's going to be a little bit difficult at first because the guys are going to be challenging to you. They may even be obnoxious. It's sad, but we need more diversity.
I already went through an electrical program where I was the only female.
You know all about it.
Yeah. And so... going, hey, I can do more with this, and wanting to steer to maybe even a triple E. I don't know.
Yeah, good for you.
Nuts.
Good, I love it. And by the way, this is really good for the industry. We need more diversity in the industry because when you get a lot of bros writing software or designing hardware, it's designed for a kind of a very narrow group of people, and everybody uses
the population.
Right, everybody uses technology now, so we need more women. We need more people of color. Everybody's using technology, and we need that diversity. And you lose that, you really don't get good products. So I really want to support you. I think the HP Spectre is very thin, very light, more like 1,000, but I think you can get down to $800 on it. And I think they're very good. They run Linux well. I run Linux on a Spectre, HP Spectre 13T. It's one of the lightest, prettiest, most beautiful notebooks. It's very easy to carry around and gets pretty good battery life. Dell makes them excellent. I would recommend the XPS 13. They have one that's detachable now, as well as, you know, one that's a convertible as well. The two, I guess it's a, maybe it's not a convertible, maybe it folds over, but it's called a 2-in-1. So you can use it in both ways. I think those are excellent. Dell XPS 13. And as I said, the Lenovo ThinkPads. Not the cheap Lenovos, but the Lenovo ThinkPads. Those are the three brands I'd steer you towards. Get a Windows machine. You'll get more bang for your buck. And you can put Linux on it. You don't have to do it today. You could do it next year. But when you really start coding, you'll note that a lot of people are using Unix boxes, either at Macs or Linux boxes. And I think that people would, you know, you'd get some advantage. And you're also going to learn how to use Unix, which I think anybody with a CS or E absolutely knows how. It needs to know how Unix works. You should check with your school. Often they have educational discounts. You should check also with your advisor to see if he has or she has a recommendation because they know what's ahead.
Yeah.
So you don't want to do it in a vacuum. I'm just so thrilled that you're doing this. I really want to support you. I know.
Bloomer, but
hey, that's fine. You bring something to the table. You've got some experience these kids don't have. And you're brave because you're doing this in addition to working full time. But I think it's great, and I think you're going to love it. Obviously, you must have some interest in it, or you wouldn't be pursuing it.
It was one of those where it's something that I found that I'm good at.
Yeah, that's great.
It wasn't that I went into it thinking that, you know, this is the right choice. My background is history and theater. I couldn't be further from
me too. But you know what? Technology needs some of these left and right brain mixes because if it's too whatever, I can't ever remember. Is it right brain that's too mathematical? They lose the what did Steve Jobs say made Apple successful? It was the intersection of the humanities and of science and of technology. You need both. We need humanists, not just scientists, making our technology. So you have an important place here. And I think actually because of your background, you'll find work better because you can speak, you can write, you understand humans in a way that a lot of engineers go, humans? I don't know. How does that work? So good luck to you. I think that's great.
Yeah, I find myself a lot at work of going, and you guys thought this would work?
Right. We need you. Get in there. Nice to meet you, Tara. Good luck.
Thank you so much.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Left brain analytical, right brain creative. All right. I can never remember that. I can remember my left from my right, but I don't know which part of my brain I'm using. I often wonder if that's a little reductionist, right? That it's really not. That's silly, right? We need more people in their right minds in technology, that's for sure. I'm a lefty, so that means I'm right-brained, right? I think it's all made up. I think a lot of this stuff is kind of like, yeah, it's sort of true. Sort of right. It is reductionist. That's what I thought. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and virtual reality and all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO. Anything with a chip in it. 888-827-5536. That's my number. Toll free from the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can just use Skype out and call that number. It shouldn't cost you anything. 8888-ASK-LEO. The website is techguylabs.com. And that's where we put all the information, everything that I mentioned. Now, James DeRuvo is usually writing this all down. He's going to do it later in the day. So don't despair if you go to techguylabs.com and there aren't any notes there yet from this show. There will be in a few hours or maybe tomorrow. We'll get it all there. Audio and video from previous shows and a chance for you to comment. And comment section is really important because, you know, this is a free site. It's open to everybody. And I'd love, you know, it's got a good search, and I'd love to just to make it a resource for people who say, well, what, you know, what should I buy? What is, how does this work? What's this error message mean? And they can come to our site and they search it and find it. And your additions in the comments make a big difference. You can also participate in our chat room. Chat room is my brain externalized, put on the internet. 500 people, stout and true, who've been listening for years in many cases. And so when I forget something, they as a collective whole remember it. I am neither left-brained or right-brained. I'm out-brained, and it's them. They're my brains. IRC, if you want to join them, irc.twit.tv. Jeremy in Ventura is next. Hi, Jeremy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, man. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, dude. I'm doing great. This is actually the first time I've actually... My family member of mine told me to call you about a question.
Thank that family member for me.
Yeah, she's great. So I know you're stripped for time and stuff like that, but I just have a couple questions for you.
Okay.
They said that you would probably be the one to call that would be able to answer these.
Ask
probably
away.
Very simple for you.
Ask
okay,
away.
Okay, I had an 11S Lenovo, okay? I still do. And it had the 3339Y processor motherboard in it.
Okay.
The original. Yeah. And the power supply went out. And so what I ended up doing, I switched it out with a Haswell 4210Y, right?
Okay.
A Haswell motherboard 4210Y on an 11S Lenovo.
Okay.
So what? And it runs great.
Good.
Everything runs awesome on it.
I take it somebody did that for you. You had a tech.
No, I did it myself.
You did. Good for you. I did. You know, normally you can't just swap a motherboard out on a laptop, but I'm glad that worked for you. All right.
Well, I program for like fire systems and stuff for the fire department, so it's not a problem. But like, so what I ended up doing, I gave that one to my mother. She loves it. It's like the greatest thing in the world to her, and it works great. I mean, it fires up fast and everything else like that. It has a I think it has 4 gigabytes of RAM, and I could upgrade that to like 8 without any problems with that motherboard, right?
Don't know. You're going to have to check the specs on the motherboard. So the amount of RAM that's available, you know, for, you know, upgrade that you can make in a laptop depends very much on the physical hardware in the laptop. That's why I'm a little surprised you're able to swap out motherboards in a laptop. That's typically... not possible, because if you think about it, laptops are very highly customized. You know, they're an exercise in compromise between power and portability. and, you know, screen size. There's a lot of factors. And almost all laptops are kind of custom built, purpose built. That laptop is, you know, designed by that designer and the engineers to be that way. And usually parts aren't that interchangeable. So, for instance, a motherboard designed for one laptop almost never will fit in another laptop. So I'm a little amazed that you were able to do that. I'm impressed. Maybe you had to saw off some edges. I don't know. But what will determine how much RAM you can get in a motherboard or a laptop is how many slots it has. And then you have to get the right RAM speed, voltage. You have to match the RAM to the specs of that motherboard. Generally, if you're going to upgrade a laptop or any computer, add more memory to it, I suggest you go to one of the memory sites, Crucial.com, Kingston.com. Those are two good ones. And they have on both those sites, at the front page there, they have RAM pickers. And you can give them the exact make and model of the device you want to upgrade. And they'll tell you not only what kind of memory you can put into it, but how much you can put into it. You know, how much it can it handle, 8 or 16. There's a sad trend in modern laptops. Apple's, you know, the leader of the pack, as often is the case, of not having slots for RAM, not even having upgradable RAM, but having the RAM soldered into the motherboard. All the new MacBooks, for instance, if you buy an 8 gigabyte, that's it. You're never going to be able to upgrade that. You buy 16, that's it. Because there's no slots. There's no way to add RAM. And if you think about it, when you're designing a laptop where, you know, size and constraints of it's got to be thin, it's got to be light, adding a socket adds some complexity, adds some size. Why have a socket if you could just, boom, put that logic, you know, the chip right on the logic board? So I think more and more laptops you're going to see, they're really not upgradable in any way. They're just what they are. It's a motherboard with stuff soldered onto it, and that's what you get. You want something more? Get a new laptop. But if you think you can upgrade an older laptop, Crucial.com, Kingston.com, they'll tell you what kind to get. Renee, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Renee.
Hello, Renee.
Leo.
Come on over to the phone. Renee, come on down.
I'm here. Hello.
Hi. Yeah. Welcome. Hi.
Thank you for taking my call. I have an old 10-pin video iPod, and I have all kinds of music that came from CDs on it that I use in my office.
Wow.
So I bought it's a stereo radio. You can put a CD, Bluetooth, and auxiliary, mm-hmm. but I don't know how to get it hooked up to it.
Well, at the very least, you could hook up the headphone jack on the iPod to the probably auxiliary in on the radio. You'd have to get a cable that the auxiliary typically has a, you know, a coax or a RCA jack cable.
Yeah.
So you need to get a mini jack from the iPod to the RCA jack on the radio, and that would work. Because it's a 30-pin connector. You know, occasionally you'll see, in fact, every time I go to a hotel, I'll still see those old iHome radios and others that had 30-pin docks that you would dock the iPod into.
Yes, I have one, and
yeah,
it works really well.
Yeah.
Now I wanted this in more than one room.
Right, exactly. More modern devices will have wireless capabilities, typically Bluetooth, that allow you to get a wireless Bluetooth speaker that you can then just stream it to without any connection at all. But these old iPods didn't, obviously.
I bought one of those Bluetooth adapters that you stick in there, and then I thought I could Bluetooth it to there, but it didn't work.
No Bluetooth in those old iPods.
No.
So that thing, you know, Apple phased out the 30-pin connector in 2010. So that thing is at least 7 years old.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's great. It still works, right?
Well, it works really well. And also, you know, I have all kinds of music that got put on there from a CD, not from buying it from
one Apple. Thing you really want to do, that iPod's going to die sooner than later, probably. If that's the only copy you have of all that music, you're very much going to want to get a computer and copy the data off of that iPod.
Okay.
Yeah, that's your only copy of it?
No, I have an iTunes account, and I think it's in there as
well. Oh, I hope so. Okay, then you're all right.
Yeah.
But very, very important because, you know, those things, they're hard drives in there. They're spinning hard drives, believe it or not.
Yes.
And they don't even make them anymore. That's why Apple discontinued that particular model of iPod. You can't get the hard drives anymore. So that's going to die. It's 7 years old. It's going to die in the next couple of years. So make sure you have a copy of everything that's on there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You have a 30-pin iPad? That is an oldie but goodie. We're seeing it more and more. Businesses bid by Apple introduced Lightning in 2010. And the iPod. iPad rather in 2010. Mm-hmm. 30-pin iPad. Must have been an iPad 1, right? Did the iPad 2 have a 30-pin? Yep. Can't do anything with that thing. The iPad 2 did? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's because they kept selling it, remember, for a while because it was the only 30-pin iPad. The easiest thing for her would be to take the headphone jack, put it in the auxiliary. It still cracks me up. I was at a hotel. The hotel I went to in Boulder had a iHome with a 30-pin connector. 30-pin dock. Walmart still sells the iPad 2? No, the iPad 3 must have had Lightning by then, right? Yeah, maybe not. Hey, Rufus. Really? You know, because that music is just kind of camp music. Yeah, this is not it. Oh, it is. Wow. I thought it was camp. Why don't we have that in it? You hear this, Michael?
Yeah, what is that?
Rufus Thomas.
Oh, okay.
It's called Hey Rufus. It's definitely different, but it's the same song. That is hysterical.
Yeah, that's very cool.
So what we have is probably from a production library, I always assumed.
Right. Because it's just called film music here.
Like, right. Well, I hope they paid Rufus for it. Step to the right. Back up. I think you should start playing this. There's all kinds of dances. Anybody, this is the one. Oh, you know what this is? I know what it is. This guy Rufus is using the canned film music and put his stuff on top of it.
That makes sense.
That's what this is. That's what this is. It says...
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he licensed it. It's royalty-free. You just buy it and you can use it. 926 East Macklemore, a reunion of former Stax artists. I'm betting he bought the film music. I don't know, though. That's a pretty funky organ. That bass is exactly the same. That's interesting. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I hope I'm making you feel geeky. That's my job, make you feel geeky. 8888 Ask Leo. Clarence is on the line from Chesapeake, Virginia. Hi, Clarence.
Hey, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Well, thank you for calling.
Sir, with all these new devices coming out, such as the Switch and such, and they all have permanent batteries.
Yeah.
Can these new devices be left on charge 24/7.
Yeah, let me explain how the rules of the road for lithium-ion batteries. Incidentally, the switch, our friends at iFixit.com, you know, whenever something new comes out, they tear it down. And they gave the Nintendo Switch, this is this new portable game system from Nintendo, an 8 out of 10 for repairability. That's a very high repairability score because you can easily, if you have the right kind of screwdriver, one of the Nintendo tri-head screwdrivers, unscrew it, and the battery is not glued in. So if you could get, it's a Nintendo battery, you'd have to buy a Nintendo part or somebody who's, you know, making identical batteries, but you could change the battery on that. So that's the good news. But if you look at an iPhone, for instance, there's no user serviceable parts. You can't take that apart. It's all glued together. And in fact, even if you did wedge apart the iPhone, the battery's glued in. That's why typically iFixit gives Apple devices 1 or 2 out of 10 for repairability. There, Apple will repair the battery for you. I think it's $90. They have special machines in the back there at the Apple store that can take this kind of stuff apart. However, your battery should last you a good few years. Generally, lithium-ion batteries have a number of charge cycles that they can, you know, that's their lifespan, typically around 500. So that means the battery can be fully charged and fully discharged 500 times before it stops holding a charge. And by the way, with lithium-ion batteries, that's pretty much it. They don't kind of, you know, slowly give up. It's over. So 500 charges, and they're not going to hold a charge. They're done. They need to be replaced, or the device needs to be replaced. And in one, you know, some ways, I'm not thrilled with the fact that more and more manufacturers are making these sealed devices like iPads and iPhones, because they're going to end up in the landfill. You know, people are going to say, well, the battery stopped working. Everything else is fine, but I can't use it. And that's a shame. These are way too expensive. And there's too many, you know, valuable materials in here to just throw it out. And God knows we don't need these in the landfill. So, yes, you want to take care of your battery as best you can. Doesn't matter. Whatever you do, 500 cycles, that's it. Important to know that if you discharge it halfway and charge it up, that's half of the one. So 500 full recharges, fractions add up to one. So, you know, a third of the way, then that's one of three, one third of one, which is means you get 1,500 thirds, I guess. I'm confusing it by saying that. Just you get 500 full cycles. The rules on lithium-ion batteries are very simple. You don't want to overcharge them. If you overcharge them, they can get hot and even explode. But don't worry, because any well-made device, and that means everything sold in the United States, pretty much, except for those hoverboards, they have circuitry that'll keep you from overcharging. You cannot overcharge an iPhone, so you don't have to worry about that. You also don't want to drain a lithium-ion battery 100%. That will cause it to fail sometimes. But again, good devices will stop working before they get to zero. You can't drain them. In general, the rule is to keep it plugged in all the time you can. So if you're at work, plug it in. Because those, you know, you don't want it to drain, because if it drains, that's going to count against your total of 500 cycles, right? So you don't want it to drain unnecessarily. So it's okay to leave your phone plugged in. Actually, what will happen is for most phones, you get little micro drains and charges. It kind of, you know, kind of oscillates back and forth. It lets it drain a little tiny, teeny, weeny bit and then charges it up. But those don't count too much against your overall cycles. If you're going to store it, the rule of the road is half full. Not all the way up, not all the way down, about half full. That's if you're not going to use it for a long period of time. So generally speaking, don't worry about it. What you're doing is probably fine. Don't let it drain intentionally. Sometimes you'll see instructions that say, make sure you drain your battery fully periodically to improve its life. That's not true for lithium ion. It was true for older technologies like nickel metal hydride and NiCads, nickel cadmium batteries. It is not true for lithium ion. Do not drain it. Keep it plugged in. It's okay to leave your laptop plugged in. It doesn't hurt it. In fact, it reduces the number of charge cycles. In fact, I'm going to plug in my phones right now. I'm going to remind myself. Keep them plugged in. That's good. You don't want it to discharge unnecessarily. And just use it, because in most cases, you're going to get, well, 500 cycles. You're probably going to get two, at least, probably 3 or 4 years. And most phones are really only designed to last a couple of years before the next generation comes along. So you'll read a lot of misinformation. Even manufacturers, I still see misinformation, you know, in the box with the instructions. There's a lot of misinformation. But I've done a lot of research on this. I've talked to a lot of battery gurus, and the consensus is this is true for all lithium-ion batteries. Okay, don't worry about it. Keep it plugged in if you can. Don't unnecessarily drain it. And it's not a good idea to drain it fully. That's not a good idea. And good news is most good devices you can't. Okay, Clarence, I hope that helps you with your battery hygiene. Most of the time, just don't worry about it. All right?
Thank you.
Thanks, Clarence. I appreciate it. Don on the line from Anchorage, Alaska. Hi, Don.
Oh, my gosh. I got on.
You got on. It's a miracle.
It's only been 7 weeks.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you.
I can't believe it.
Thank you for your patience.
Oh, I'm so glad.
You poor guy.
You can help.
I'm so sorry.
No. I have an HP. I call it a transportable desktop. It's too big to be called a laptop.
Yeah.
It looks like a laptop. Nice computer. I love it, and I've gotten a lot of good comments from it from technicians in the past. But I recently succumbed to the allure to upgrade from 7 to 10 on the operating system. What a big mistake that was.
Uh-oh. Another man with Windows 10 regrets.
Well, it's a beautiful screen, but there's this pop-up on-screen keyboard that keeps coming up, and I can't get rid of it.
That's because it's, for some reason, thinking it's in tablet mode. So all you have to do is turn off tablet mode. Windows 10, like Windows 8, was Microsoft's response to the sudden interest in iPads. They thought, oh, computing's moving towards keyboardless computing, so we better have a feature in our new versions of Windows that allows you to type on the key on the screen, just like you do on an iPad. That's tablet mode, and it pops up when you go into tablet mode. So I'm pretty sure, I'll have to look, but I'm pretty sure you can disable that permanently.
That'd be wonderful.
Yeah, and say, don't go into tablet mode unless I explicitly tell you. I'm going to open up. I have a Microsoft Surface Book, which is designed for Windows 10 and does have a detachable screen. So it would go into tablet mode when you detach the screen because you don't have access to the keyboard. Let me look. Hang on. We're going to take a break anyway. But let me look in the settings and find this setting to turn off tablet mode. Easy way for you to do the same probably would be to go to the control panel and search for tablet mode. And I bet you we'll be able to find it right there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Tablet mode settings. Yeah, here it is. I'm going to keep you on because you waited so darn long. And if you, it's in the control panel, tablet mode. It says, when I sign in, use the appropriate mode for my hardware. Well, clearly, you know, that HP predates tablets, and so it's confused. So I would just go use desktop mode. And then when this device automatically switches tablet mode on or off, don't ask me and don't switch. And you will never see that.
Okay. And it says, when I sign in, use desktop mode, and that's what it says right now.
Yep. And then the next one below that, when this device automatically switches, say, don't ask me, and don't switch. I don't want to go into tablet mode.
Okay, so it says that already.
Oh. And you're still getting the keyboard. Now, you know there is a little button down here in the system tray. There's a little keyboard button that you can push that'll pop the keyboard up.
Right.
I wonder.
That may be why it comes up sometimes when I don't want it.
Yeah, you might be hitting that by accident.
When I change browsers or if I change, sometimes I just change screens, it comes back up again.
So so in the lower right-hand corner, you know, you have this notification or the action center, they call it. And there is a tablet mode button there.
Okay.
Which you can hit to turn it off if it goes into tablet mode. It shouldn't, you know, if you've got those settings, it sounds like it's set right. It shouldn't be going into tablet mode automatically.
Okay. Well, that's what I would have thought, too.
Yeah.
Because I'm looking at tablet mode now. When you said that, I went looking for it right away.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go back to ease of access and turn off that thing one more time.
Ah, yeah. It might be, look at your accessibility settings because there might be something that's triggering that. WebKit suggests that it's the keyboard from assistive features rather than the tablet mode. So let's take a look at that. keyboard. Actually, let's go into the assistive features.
Now, are you on just private right now? Or are we on?
Yeah, well, we're on the podcast, so there's still people listening. But
oh, I see. Okay.
But not on the radio.
If I didn't get through to you today, I was going to try your techguylabs.com to see if that would be a place to go.
Yeah, I can't answer a whole lot of emails only because I get so many, and I would be spending all my free time answering people's questions. There's a deep-seated need for this, but I am afraid I am just one person. I can't really help everybody, so I generally don't. We have somebody who answers emails, but we're not very helpful.
Can I get greedy and ask another question?
Please.
I was looking at changing my iPhone 5S out to a newer phone, and I'm seeing an iPhone SE. I've never heard of it before. The guy at the Verizon place tells me it's the same phone as the 6S in a 5S case.
That's exactly right.
What a deal. I can't believe it. That's wonderful.
Yeah. So Apple realized there's some market for a lower-priced phone. They don't want to make a cheap iPhone, but this is their concession to that. And there's still also a market. In fact, the SE sells really well for small phones. People don't want big screens. So this is a 5-inch screen. But in order to make it compatible with updates and so forth, they put the processor from the 6S in it. So it's much faster.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. It's a very, in fact, I recommend it to a lot of people who don't want a big phone.
That's me.
Yep. And it's cheaper.
A little bit.
Yeah, Apple doesn't make cheap phones.
No,
they don't. They don't want to be seen as the low cost leader.
Oh.
So I'm pretty sure. I mean, it's either that. It could be that that's the assistive keyboard. If that's the case, then go into the assistive section of the control panel and make sure that's not popping up. That may be why that's popping up.
Another place to go than assistive. Okay.
Yeah.
Now another thing I lost when I upgraded to 10 was I lost scrolling from my touchpad. Is there a geek kind of guy that is one of my renters? He says you can get a driver?
Yeah. So you probably have a Synaptics touchpad, but you need to find out who makes the touchpad and get an updated driver for that touchpad. Scrolling is almost certainly built in. If you had it before, you just need to get the right driver for Windows 10.
Okay. Yeah, I had it before, and I really loved it.
Yeah.
Lost it.
You know, you should have it. Make sure that the settings is not turned off in settings. But my suspicion is that you just didn't get the latest driver with the Windows 10 upgrade for that hardware. So look in your device manager and see what the hardware is, and then get that hardware driver. Got to run. The late, great Chuck Berry. What a talent. They said that Chuck Berry played concerts, in fact, until very recently, he played concerts all over the world. And he never brought a band with him because no matter where he went, there was always a band that knew every one of his songs. Chuck Berry, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, helped Don a little bit more with his Windows 10 woes. It's a, you know, Windows 7 was a great version of Windows. It really was. But, you know, Microsoft, it's 10 years old now. Microsoft had to update it. They did Windows 8, which was terrible. Adding to the kind of folklore that Microsoft screws up every other version of Windows. You know, Windows 95 or 98 was great, but Windows ME was terrible. Windows 2000 was great, but Windows XP was terrible. And on and on and on. And yeah, Windows 7 was easily the best version of Windows, I thought, ever. Then Windows 8 came out, and this was Microsoft's attempt to kind of move into the future, compete with the iPad. They thought everybody's going to tablet, so we need a hybrid desktop and tablet operating system. And it was terrible at both, and it was awful. It was just horrible. So they polished it. They fixed it over time. They got it, I think, to the point where it had tablet features, but it still was a great desktop operating system. And that's Windows 10. And the most important message with Windows 10 is it's the last version of Windows, period. Microsoft has reinvented itself and reinvented its business model. Windows used to be every 5 years or 4 years, there's a new version of Windows, which you need to buy. Most people would just get it with a new computer. People were buying new computers every few years. They're not anymore because the newer computers aren't any faster than the older computers. I mean, there's no reason to. So Microsoft has rethought Windows, and instead of being, you know, software you buy in a box and install on a computer, it's now what they call software as a service. Windows as a service. You get it over the internet. There's no box. There's no disk. And it's automatically kept up to date. And this is, as far as I can tell, I mean, they could change their mind, but this is their plan going forward, is if you have Windows 10, you have the last version of Windows. And every couple of times every year, we're going to update that. The next version, big update coming in the next month, probably April, early April. It's the Windows 10 Creators Edition. That'll be a fairly large update. Polishing it, though, not dramatically changing it as we did from Windows 7 to 8 and 8 to 10. Something just evolutionary. And that's every, you know, maybe every 6 months, every 3 to 6 months, we're going to get a new version, an update like that. For all time, which is good. I mean, why, you know, you don't need to pay for Windows anymore. Microsoft makes its money in other ways, through services, through cloud services, things like that. So it is worth getting to Windows 10 if you can, because that machine will then automatically receive updates to have the latest version of Windows for all time. It's hard to say for all time in a technology context. Things change so rapidly, but that's the plan anyway. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Jeremy is on the line from Torrance, California. Hi, Jerry.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
I'm great. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, it's about time. I've been waiting for you. Thank you.
So I kind of have a similar situation to one of the girls earlier. I've been on a Mac for about 10 years doing film and photography.
Nice.
And now I'm going back to school for aerospace engineering.
Awesome.
And unfortunately, all of the engineering software, SolidWorks and EagleCAD and all that, they all are Windows only.
Yeah, yeah.
So now I'm wondering, all right, I haven't been on a Windows for 10 years. What's the best machine to go on? And, I know you were saying something about Linux before, but these are
no, Windows. No, you need Windows. Software, you have to have Windows. You're the software, and that's what I mentioned to her, too. You're going to find out what software you're going to be using, because you got to get the operating system that goes with it. The nice thing is right. You can run Linux on most Windows machines, so you'll have that option. You know, if you start doing some programming or so forth. But most of the stuff that you're for aerospace, I think, is on Windows. So the good news is Windows 10, for all the hate we hear, is actually very good and pretty Mac-ish. I don't think you're going to have as much difficulty as you might imagine. You know, the differences are small and easily overcome. For instance, you know, the biggest difference is Apple puts a menu bar, no matter what program you're running, at the top of the screen. You know, so when you run Microsoft Word, the menu's up at the top of the screen. And when you change programs, the menu at the top of the screen changes. On Windows, the menu's attached to the window. So you can have different menus on every window, which actually makes much more sense, to be honest. You don't make so many mouse moves up to the top of the screen. But it takes a while to get used to. The maximize button is on the right, not on the left. Little things like that. This isn't going to be a big change for you. You know, it still has, doesn't call it the system preferences. It's got a control panel, but it's the same thing. It's at the bottom left instead of the top left. It's not a big difference. So computers is computers. I think you'll be very comfortable. The good news is only Apple makes Macintoshes, which means that you can only get what Apple makes, which is frankly very limited and very expensive. You have a whole ecosystem of Windows hardware manufacturers. The sky's the limit.
And that's kind of what I've been running into is, you know, now there's so many options, I don't even know what to
get. Yeah, it was that's the easy thing on buying a Mac is, how much money do you have? Okay, buy this one. With Windows, it's like, wow. So the you'll hear, as I said to our caller earlier, the manufacturers I like, Dell is very good. Dell makes machines, workstations called Precision workstations, that are designed for exactly what you're doing. Those are the high-end power machines. It's what we use for our video editors, for instance. They use Dell Precision workstations with Adobe Premiere to do their video editing. These are the high-end machines. All the aerospace guys will have Dell Precision workstations.
Okay.
So that's the first thing I'd look at. Those are desktops, not laptops. If you want a laptop and you're looking for thin and light, I really do like those HP Spectres. A lot of people are – HP's come around. They did not make good computers for many years. But they're new. They split off. I don't know if you know, the PC division split from the enterprise division, and the PC division is making very good laptops. And if Lenovo, even though it's a Chinese company now, they bought IBM's ThinkPad brand, and the ThinkPads are still designed by the guys in the U.S., the ThinkPad team in the U.S., and they're still very good. So the ThinkPad, if you want a lightweight power machine that's really well made, the ThinkPad X1 Carbon is fantastic. These are all closer to Mac prices than, you know, cheap Windows machines, but you get what you pay for. You want good components.
Right. All right, great. Thank you.
Yeah, I think you'll be very happy. Now, some people do run Windows on a Mac. I do with Boot Camp. And
yeah,
Max,
I've tried that, and it's just a lot of the interfacing with the program. It's so specific with keyboard commands and stuff that it just doesn't really work right.
And Apple doesn't use the latest, greatest graphics cards, GPUs, and that's what you need for these, for SolidWorks and these high-end CAD programs. So frankly, the hardware on the Windows side is much better than Apple offers. It's very frustrating for those of us who love Macs. We can't get good hardware. We're stuck with what Apple offers, and it's getting worse.
Right.
Very disappointing. So you're in good company. A lot of people making this switch that you're making, especially pros. And Dell, Lenovo, HP, all excellent. There's also Asus, A-S-U-S, excellent. Acer's higher-end stuff is very good as well. If I were to rank them, I'd say Dell, Lenovo. Well, okay, let's say Lenovo, Dell, HP, Asus, Acer, 1 through 5.
Great, thank you.
Enjoy your new career.
Thanks.
It's always fun to buy new hardware. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I should have mentioned Microsoft. I apologize because, you know what, I always forget that Microsoft makes good stuff. They make very good stuff. I'm very happy with the Surface Book. But their stuff tends to be much more expensive. They're Apple priced. And you're paying for a brand. So the Surface Pro 4 is really great. And this is the Surface Book, really great. But in my opinion, expensive for the price. And I should have mentioned the Creative Studio, shouldn't I? Because the Surface Studio, rather, because that is a fantastic computer, but it's very low-end components. What you're paying $3,000 for is a screen that would be great for what you're going to do because it goes down a drafting angle. It goes to 20 degrees, and it's got a pen, and it's got a knob. And for SolidWorks and that, it would be beautiful. But it's hard to recommend because it's kind of mid. For $3,000, it's a very mid-range hardware. With the most beautiful screen you've ever seen. I have to think that you will see a few Surface Studios in your school, in the labs and stuff, because it's just, you know, with the pen, it's just made for, it's like drafting, but you're going to be using your software. What we did with our Surface Studio is we took the spinning drive out, really mid-range crap 5400 RPM spinning drive. We replaced, there's two drives in it. There's a caching SSD, M.2 SSD, and a spinning drive. We took them both out and replaced them with an M.2 NVMe solid-state drive, fast one, and a fast SSD. And that really improved performance, but it's still that kind of middle-of-the-road i5. And it's not even the latest i5. It's kind of, it's incomprehensible. I don't understand why Microsoft did that. Yeah, oh, this, you know, this Surface Book is kind of like a Mac. I mean, it's, you know, it's Mac priced, $1,500, and Mac made, Mac designed. You know, it's really nice. But I feel like you could get just as good, or maybe even better, with a ThinkPad for, you know, a lesser price. Plus, I'm a little burned by the problems. This is the first generation Surface Book, and it was really unusable for 9 months. They finally, you know, fixed all the firmware, but it was really unusable for a long time. You know, it can't, bud, man. So people keep asking Microsoft, when are you just going to put out the screen? Sell the screen so we can put our own, you know, PC on it. And they said never. And I think it's because of the tight integration. The screen has its own microprocessor, it's an ARM microprocessor. And I think that They're doing some magic in there. Yeah, I should have bought the high-end Surface for $4,000. Actually, for what I use it for, the entry-level base model Surface Studio is fabulous. I'm tired. Oh, I love the Surface Studio Loquacious. I can't get enough of it. It's fabulous. Fabulous. I almost bought a second one for the house, but then I thought, nah, let's not be silly. Let's not be silly. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The waning minutes of our show. Let's see how many calls I can get in. And thanks once again to Michael Kozio, our musical director, and to Kim Schaffer for answering the phones, and to all of you for being here. If I run out of time, I want to make sure I thank you for joining us. We do this, every weekend, but we also, I have a podcast network, I should mention. Monday through Friday, we've got lots more geek talk. If you really are a tech enthusiast, visit our website, TWIT.TV. It stands for This Week in Tech. And we have about 25 shows. We go 24/7, lots of great content at twit.tv, including this show. Steve in Trabuco Canyon, California. Hi, Steve. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good day, Leo.
Good day, Steve.
I have an unfortunate question for you. It's time, once again, to consider upgrading our mobile phones. But
that's a happy time.
Well, as much as I dearly miss my Symbian Series 6.
Oh, you want a Symbian?
I lost a bet years ago and had to switch to Windows Phone. And it's been great.
You really did lose that bet.
But
was that or paint yourself red and dance through Union Square, right? I mean, you had two choices.
Well, yeah. Well, 14 other people dropped their iPhones and Android phones and switched because it just works so well.
Yeah. Well,
but it's time to consider, upgrading. And being kind of a fanboy since the 90s, I hear Nokia is releasing phones again with a Chinese subcontractor called the 6.
Yeah, it's actually not a Chinese subcontractor. It's a group of people who worked at Nokia when they were doing phones, then went across the street. They're in Espoo, Finland, just like Nokia, to make their new Nokia smartphones. They're probably made in China, but so was everything, including the old Lumia phones. These new Nokia phones are actually quite nice. They're mid-range price. They're trying to... So Nokia had an incredible brand worldwide for low-end phones. Now, I know in the United States, those Lumias, which is probably what you had, right?
Right now, yeah.
Yeah, those were great phones. They were not by any means low-end. They were expensive and very well-made. But mostly, Nokia is known for the candy bar phones, the inexpensive phones. And they're trying to keep that brand alive. They made a deal when they sold to Microsoft. They wouldn't make any phones until 2017. Well, lo and behold, here's 2017, and they announced at CES a return to phones for... Well, not exactly Nokia, for this company that had Nokia engineers and they're licensing the Nokia name. But they're as close as you can get to Nokia phones. It's the same guys.
I walked CES until my feet were bleeding and couldn't find any of these phones.
I didn't go this year, and this is why. Because I don't want my feet to bleed. I'm sure they were showing them in a room somewhere.
Nobody, not even Qualcomm, could tell me where I could find
one. Oh, that's hysterical.
Even Android experts, they didn't have any idea either.
The good news is you can go online to the Nokia website and look at the phone. It's an all-aluminum body. It's a lower-end Qualcomm processor. It's not super fast, 5.5 inches. And they're selling it for €229, which is, under $400 here in the States. It's a great price. Is it going to be as good as the Lumia? I doubt it, but...
I can't find one anywhere to touch, of course, in the States yet. They're released in India or whatever.
Right. In fact, that's a question, too, is whether Nokia ever will sell it in the U.S.
Yeah. Well, right now I'm stuck with my Lumia that is, it's been 60 miles an hour off the roof of the car and still works.
Which one did you get?
This one's the 640.
Yeah. Yeah, that thing is pretty robust. And The problem is, of course, that even Microsoft has given up on Windows Phone.
Yeah,
that's true. Nobody's developing for it, and some key apps like your banking apps aren't on it anymore, and that starts to, you know, that kind of kills the ecosystem.
So, I'd love to know if I could root this and just install Android on it, because I really like the feel of it. It's a good size. Yeah. The battery lasts 4 days.
I know. Not to my knowledge, no. You check XDA developers and see, but I've never seen anybody say that you could do anything with those Lumias.
Yeah, I haven't either.
Yeah. So the thing about this Nokia Lumia 6 is it's an Android phone. So your loyalty to Nokia is maybe a little misguided here. This is it's not really Nokia. It's not the same hardware, and it's Android. It's not Symbian. It's not Windows. You know,
I'm looking for something that's a decent build quality. I'm not, you know, I won't say that I'm the nicest person in the world to my phones. Neither is my wife. Right. And so far, I mean, you've seen the videos of people using old Nokia candy bars as hockey pucks.
No modern smartphone is like that. And the real problem is the digitizer, the touch screen on the front, the glass. As soon as you have a big slab of glass, you can't play hockey with it anymore.
I ended up cracking this one about 4 months ago.
Yeah,
like I said, it's even 60 miles an hour off the roof of my car didn't crack it. But it's $7 to get a replacement because it doesn't have an integral digitizer. The digitizer is behind the glass.
Right.
So they're built really well. But I'm just wondering, do you have any recommendations for something? Because obviously Windows Phone's kind of petering out, even though
In my opinion, the best Android phone out there, and it is very well made, it's as solid as any Android phone, is the one from Google. If you can find it, the Pixel. The Pixel or the Pixel XL, if you like a larger phone. They're pure Android. Google is keeping them up to date in the same way Apple keeps its iPhones up to date. They're forcing those updates out. It's an unlocked phone, although you can use it with Google's own cell carrier, Google Fi, which I think is actually a very good carrier. They merge service from T-Mobile, Sprint, U.S. Cellular, and your Wi-Fi to get, I think, really great coverage. I use a Pixel, and I'm very happy with that. It's expensive. They start just like all the other high-end phones at $750. But if you can find a Pixel, get a Pixel. Samsung's going to have its new Galaxy S8 in about a month. They say late April it'll be available. That is going to be the, you know, high-end best Android phone out there. It'll have a stunning camera, every bit as good as your Nokia Lumia. Better. It'll have, more modern processors. This will be the latest Snapdragon, 835. I think that might be one to watch for. There are less expensive but very nicely built Android choices. The ZTE Axon 7. ZTE is a Chinese company. And the Axon 7, I thought, had beautiful build quality. Unibody, aluminum. It was pretty pure Android. I thought these were very good and had excellent sound, if that's important to you. So you're going to get an Android phone if you get a Nokia these days, unless you get the 3310. But if you get one of the new Nokia smartphones, it's an Android phone. Get a real Android phone. Get it from Google. That'd be my recommendation. Hey, thanks for the call. I've got about a minute left. Let me see if I can help Eva from San Diego. Hi, Eva.
Hi, I am calling because I have a MacBook, and it always says that I'm running out of storage, but I don't know where I am using all of this storage.
I've got a program for you. It's called Disk Inventory X. It's free, and what it does, it's great. It shows in a color graphic what's using space. So you'll see big red blobs, and that is, you know, that's the thing to worry about. And you can see what it is, and you can see if you can safely delete it. It's the first step to figuring out what's using up all your disk space. And it's free, and I like it. And you can get it from Derlien.com, Derlien.com. 60 seconds, I did it. I'm out of time, though. Thanks for joining us. I hope you'll come back next time. Don't forget the website, techguylabs.com. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.